into the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Friday afternoon, the 10th of October, 2025. We're at the InfoWars headquarters, of course, here in Austin, Texas, and we have a lot to cover today, a lot of stuff going on. And we'll be joined in studio by Myron Gaines in the second hour of this program. Then I'll be taking phone calls in the third hour, and I'll invite Myron to stay. It's up to him. He just did 2 hours with Alex Jones, but he'll do an hour with us, and then we'll take your calls in the third hour. We have a lot to talk about, from the peace deal, new developments about that, new information about a Air Force base, a Qatari Air Force base here in America. That's a little bit odd. It's a little bit strange. We'll get into that. And in case you were not believing me when I was saying that we really are in a turning point right now, things are not as they used to be. We're not in Kansas anymore. I got a couple of examples of that today, of just the type of thing you see and you go, I don't exactly understand why these people are saying these things, but something's happening. But something very strange is going on. Clip 16 here is the mainstream media, CNN, I believe, or is it CBS, actually reporting that, you know, guys, they've looked into it, and it looks like Jeffrey Epstein may not have killed himself. Can you believe it? No, we know. It's just, why are you saying it? No, that's true, but why are you saying it, mainstream media? Let's watch.
Ever before been seen publicly. Scott McFarland joins us now from Washington with more on this. Scott, what's in the photos? Good morning.
Hey, Tony, good morning. The photos were taken by New York's Office of Chief Medical Examiner, and they raise more questions than they answer. Epstein's body was removed before investigators arrived, and Epstein's cell, experts say, should have been treated as a crime scene, and by all appearances, it was not.
On the morning of August 10th, 2019, convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein was found dead at the Metropolitan Correctional Center in Lower Manhattan. This was the vow of then Attorney General Bill Barr.
We will get to the bottom of what happened, and there will be accountability.
Epstein's death was quickly ruled a suicide. But an investigation of jail cell photos by CBS News working with forensic experts has raised serious questions about the New York Medical Examiner and the FBI's work, including a failure to preserve the scene, log evidence, and run basic forensic tests. There are 90 photos in all, showing a cell strewn with blankets and strips of fabric tied to the bed and window grate. Items moved around, including a mattress, which is seen on the floor in an earlier photo, but appears on the bed in a later one. Looking at the metadata, that second photo appears to have been taken at 11:02 a.m. If that's accurate, the scene had been disturbed hours before FBI investigators arrived. Investigators also found several possible nooses, but did not conclusively identify the one that killed him.
What do you make of all these pictures?
I make a crime scene gone wrong.
Herman Weisberg is a former NYPD detective turned private investigator.
Does it look to you like this was investigated as a suicide or as a murder?
To me, this looks like they took it at face value that this was a suicide.
While our investigation did not contradict the official determination of suicide, it does raise questions about what was done to rule out the possibility of murder.
If you realize that you've got a high-profile person that may or may not have committed suicide, but you need to prove that to people, this is not adequate as far as I'm concerned.
We've reached out to the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner, as well as former and current staff involved in the investigation, the FBI and the Department of Justice. All declined to comment, or Tony simply did not respond.
What do you know? Gee, what do you know? You're telling me that Epstein might not have killed himself? Why? This is the first time hearing about this. Again, you don't need an excuse to tell the truth. You don't need a reason to lie. The truth is the truth. It's why we say it when it happens. There's a reason that they're coming out with this now, and it has nothing to do about their drive for truth or about some sort of impulse in them to provide real information to the American people. They think they can weaponize Epstein now. They think this is a, you know, thorn in the side of Trump, so they're pretending to care about it for the first time ever. They've known this the entire time. They've covered it up the entire time. And that was CBS. But let's not forget, it was ABC that had the Epstein story years before it broke nationwide, except here on InfoWars. And they buried it. They contributed to this crisis.
Why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
Because you showed up.
You voted.
You can extend it right now.
A permanent extension of massive tax breaks. Is that right?
90% of Americans take the standard deduction.
Is that right?
If you had your way, the standard deduction would have been cut in half. That would have been a massive tax increase on Americans.
Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic Party, and the rest of the deep state want you and I to shut up. We're not going to shut up. That's why on top of the giant sale we've got going, Veterans of the InfoWar right now, you get an additional 10% off at checkout at thealexshowstore.com with promo code Hakeem. Because no, Hakeem, we're not going to shut up. And when Americans and others back InfoWars and this operation and what we're doing, they are literally defending the tip of the spear. This is the media operation the globalists and the left hate the most. We can't do this without your support. So please help keep us on the air and really say no to Hakeem Jeffries and the rest of these people by going to theallshowstore.com for the best supplements, widest selection of Patriot apparel, and gear. Promo code Hakeem to get 10% off right now.
Peeling back the layers of the day's events to reveal the core truth. War Room with Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, folks. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Myron Gaines will be joining me in the second hour. We'll be taking your calls in the third hour for this Friday broadcast. We have a lot to talk about here, especially as the ceasefire in Gaza between Gaza and Israel comes to fruition, has now been invoked. People are moving back to their homes in northern Gaza, and the celebrations continue just about everywhere except for the Israeli government and the cabinet of Benjamin Netanyahu. They don't seem thrilled about this, which for people who love humanity is a good thing. That's actually a very good thing. I do have a few questions about it. You know, yesterday, a pure celebration, just excited that this, you know, peace deal was happening, feeling the energy and the vibes from the streets of Gaza where they were chanting Trump's name in thanks for ending the nightmare they've been barely living through if they're lucky over the last little while, or the last 2 years to be exact. And I still think this deal, everything I'm seeing about it, is kind of the best possible outcome for the entire situation. But now I think it's time to look at sort of where we go from here. Our relationship with Qatar, I'm seeing a lot of concerning information about that, including this Qatari air base in Idaho. But I don't think that's quite as nefarious as people are portraying it as, because Qatar is a very interesting and kind of strange phenomenon on the world stage. And we'll get into that in just a little bit. It's suffice it to say, the entire population of Qataris, is like less than 400,000 people. So, you know, this isn't like Iran. It's not like Iran with 90 million people. It's significantly less than 500,000 people in the entire world are Qatari. And while, you know, I understand that a lot of times people are like, well, Israel's just the size of New Jersey. Who cares about that? It's like, that's a little bit different. You got millions of people. The diaspora obviously is extremely numerous and powerful. Qatar's not quite like that. So I think it's different. I think it's actually maybe the opposite of what people are thinking it is. I think Trump has locked in on Qatar as like a satellite of America. I think we're sort of colonizing Qatar. I think we see Qatar now almost as just an outpost of America in a lot of ways. I think we're getting a lot more from them than they're getting from us. But I'll explain all of that in just a little bit. But one of the other concerning things about the Israeli agreement is, of course, who was involved in brokering it, and that Jared Kushner apparently had an oversized role in this. And I frankly don't have a lot of trust for Jared Kushner for very good reason. And I'm not entirely confident of where his loyalty lies exactly. You might not know this, but like the Kushners and the Netanyahus are like family friends from way back. And, you know, when Benjamin Netanyahu would go to New York City, they had like a bedroom for him in their house, I'm pretty sure. So, you know, he and his family have known Benjamin Netanyahu for way longer than he's ever known the Trumps. I was watching him sitting next to Benjamin Netanyahu today and just thinking, all right, if it was a Sophie's Choice situation, if he had to choose between Netanyahu and Trump as to where his loyalty lies, do you think he would choose Trump? I mean, I know he's married to Trump's daughter, but I don't know if that's a sure thing. I'm not sure if that commitment and that loyalty overwhelms or trumps the family loyalty, the ethnic loyalty, the personal loyalty he holds for Netanyahu. So I'm suspicious of who is involved in this, but everything I'm seeing shows me that Netanyahu is not happy with this arrangement, is not a fan of the way things turned out, and for very good reason. He achieved nothing. He basically achieved none of his goals. Now, they say that they achieved all their goals. The only goal you could possibly say that they achieved would be getting the hostages back, but they could have done that on October 9th. On October 9th, Hamas offered to give all of the hostages back in exchange for the prisoners that were held by Israel, and they refused that. They've had multiple chances to get the hostages back since then. They've always chosen war. So that wasn't really even a goal in the first place. Like, most of the hostages who have been killed by Israeli airstrikes. Like, it's nothing. They have not gotten anything that they wanted whatsoever. And I feel like you can see it in his body language. You can hear it in his voice. And you can see it in the way that the Israeli media is covering this. And I think something else that is worth considering, because I see some people on the right that are very mad at this agreement. Again, I just genuinely don't understand that, because it seems like all the Gazans are extremely thrilled with what's going on. All of the Arab countries around the area are very happy about what's going on. Israel is the one place where you've got ministers saying they would vote against the ceasefire and they're outraged by it. And so if you're anti-Israel, if you're, you know, oppose Israel in this matter, why would you not be in favor of this? The Israeli people, of course, are thrilled. They're getting their hostages back. They're getting their family back, and their, you know, nightmare is coming to an end as well. So it's really just the Israeli leadership, as far as I can tell. But I do think it's a good point that, you know, Candace Owens had a clip going viral from her show yesterday, and she was very sort of mad at the peace deal and was basically saying, this is our never again. You're not going to get away with this. We can't let them get away with this. And I think that's correct. I do think that's correct. It's a weird situation, because any other time that anything like this has ever happened in the world, you had a coalition of countries coming together to defeat the genocidal nation and then, you know, just brutally oppress them from then on, right? Just install governments on top of them, puppet governments, and just, you know, control their people and really severely punish the people that carried out the genocide, right? The Nuremberg trials. I do think it's a bit of a betrayal that there aren't any Nuremberg trials slated for the Netanyahu gang and what they've been up to. Obviously, the end of the war doesn't mean he's no longer convicted for war crimes. That still stands. And if he goes to European nations, they'll arrest him on orders of the ICC. So he's not getting away scot-free, but I do feel like we can't let them just get away with this. Like, there does have to be some sort of recompense beyond just, okay, you guys have to stop now. Beyond just stopping the killing from continuing, like, what about all of the people that have been killed? What about all of the innocents that have been murdered? This is not justice for them. The first step is just stop them from dying. So, okay, check mark on that. But the next step should be get justice for all the people that didn't make it out alive. And again, the Israeli newspapers, I think, recognize this dynamic appearing, where you've got this headline from Times of Israel, 2 years after October 7th, from JNS, Jewish News Syndicate, I think it is. Netanyahu is the post-October 7th war's victor, not its scapegoat. They're like, no, we won. No, we did really good. We definitely won. Don't call him a scapegoat. Don't blame this on him. Congratulate him for his victory. Well, it's not even a scapegoat. No, he's just the guilty party. It's like, no, a scapegoat is something that isn't guilty that you blame something on falsely. Yeah, that wouldn't be the case with Netanyahu. He is the one who did it. His party's the one who did it. This is not scapegoating. This is appropriately applying the guilt where it belongs. So let's be clear on that. But obviously, they really are worried about the framing of this discussion, where it's like everybody recognizes Israel lost this war. They lost the war. They didn't have as many people die obviously. They didn't have their, you know, entire landscape just completely obliterated and turned into rubble, obviously. But they definitely didn't win. They definitely didn't get what they wanted. They definitely aren't coming out on top. And in fact, according to places, you know, people like the new leader of Hezbollah, they say they're stronger than they were on October 7th. So, you know, if you have to say this type of thing, you already lost the argument. If you're out there going, no, we won this war. He's not a scapegoat. He's a victor. It's like, okay. You keep telling yourself that. His critics are determined to cast the prime minister as the villain of the war, but only his steadfast focus on denying victory to Hamas forced it to surrender at Trump's demands. Okay. Yeah, sure. Whatever you say, the Jewish news syndicate, I'm not buying it. Let's go to clip four here. This is Netanyahu announcing this victory. I mean, you tell me if this looks like a victorious person. You tell me if the underlying sentiment informing this press conference is a victory parade or a humiliation ritual. Let's watch.
We're at a momentous development in the last 2 years. We fought during these 2 years to achieve our war aims. And a central one of these war aims is to return the hostages, all of the hostages, the living and the dead. And we're about to achieve that goal. We couldn't have achieved it without the extraordinary help of President Trump and his team, Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner. They worked tirelessly with Ron and his team, our team. That and the courage of our soldiers who entered Gaza and the combined military and diplomatic pressure that isolated Hamas, I think, has brought us to this point. I want to personally thank both of you, Steve, Jared. It's been long hours. You worked around the clock, but not only worked, I think you put in your brains and your hearts. And we know that it's for the benefit of Israel and the United States, for the benefit of decent people everywhere, and for the benefit of these families who will finally get to be with their loved ones. And I want to thank you on their behalf as well, and on behalf of the people of Israel.
All right, we can take it down. I think that's Steve Witkoff to his right crying, which is kind of interesting. That's kind of interesting. So, again, it's kind of weird seeing Kushner sitting there next to him. But, again, does this look like a victory? I mean, we know what Benjamin Netanyahu looks like when he feels victorious. And it's, you know, it's like seeing a gorilla. He's beating his chest and, oh, yeah, we really crushed him into the dirt. And that's what you get for messing with it. You don't see any of the cockiness. You don't see any of the superiority. He looks sort of schlumpy, kind of disheveled. This is a great victory, you know. I just thank you, everybody. You know, this amazing war aims that we achieved. It's like they don't like that. They don't like this one bit. And honestly, that probably means we're in great danger for the next false flag. And we may be sending the bait for that exact action. U.S. sending about 200 troops to monitor Gaza ceasefire deal. The United States is sending about 200 troops to Israel to help support and monitor the ceasefire deal in Gaza as part of a team that includes partner nations, non-governmental organizations, and private sector players, U.S. officials said Thursday. The officials, who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss details that were not authorized in the release, said U.S. Central Command is going to establish a civil military coordination center in Israel that will help facilitate the flow of humanitarian aid as well as logistical and security assistance into the territory racked by 2 years of war. The remarks provide some of the first details on how the ceasefire deal will be monitored and that the U.S. military would have a role in that effort. After Israel and Hamas agreed to the first phase of the Trump administration's plan to halt the fighting, a litany of questions remain as to the next steps, including Hamas disarmament, a withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza, and a future government in the territory. One of the officials said the new team will help monitor implementation of the ceasefire agreement and the transition to a civilian government in Gaza. You know, I'm not totally against this, to be honest with you. I mean, it's probably the only time I've ever seen headlines about American soldiers going to the Middle East that I'm like, yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, actually, that kind of makes sense. Actually, you don't want the IDF doing this, obviously. Not sure who else. I don't really want the UN, you know, putting their troops on the ground. NATO putting their troops on the ground. Somebody's got to, you know, enforce the measures of the treaty that isn't one of the two parties to the treaty. So, yeah, 200 American soldiers going to just oversee and help kind of keep the peace while things get sorted out. Of course, it is a potential target for disaster. Clearly, Israel or any other actor in the region, for that matter, now has a very juicy bullseye if they, you know, choose to strike. That would almost inevitably draw America in a very real way into the conflict. But it seems like everybody's kind of walking on eggshells around this whole thing. Again, the Israelis aren't happy with it, but are pretending it's a victory. The Middle East, you know, all the Middle East partners, I think, are putting a lot of stock into this peace agreement and are going to be making big investments on the basis of the peace agreement. So there's a lot of investment in general, political capital, monetary capital going into this agreement that I don't think anybody really wants to mess up. It's tenuous, but it's positive. So we're shipping 200 troops, and as long as, you know, they don't get hit by some sort of false flag, I don't see how this is all that bad of a thing. And then you have this from Pete Hegseth, U.S. to host Qatari Air Force facility in Idaho. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said Friday that the U.S. will host a new Qatari Air Force facility in Idaho where pilots will train to fly F-15s. Hegseth said the Trump administration has signed the letter greenlighting the building of a Qatar Emiri Air Force contingent in the Mountain Home Air Force Base located in southwestern Idaho. Qatari Emiri Air Force Base is the air arm of Qatar's armed forces. So people are wondering about this and kind of confused about this. It's not the first time that we've done something like this, that America's done something like this, but it's not super regular that we do this. It does happen occasionally, usually, and actually it happened more in the past. Like for a while, America would host the Royal Air Force during World War II to help train their pilots, or we'll bring people over temporarily. This seems a little bit more than that, and clearly there is an increasing, you know, alliance between specifically the Trump administration and Qatar. Now, again, Qatar is a very interesting nation. It has about 3 million people who live there, but only 300 and about 62,000 of them are actual Qataris. And we talked about this a while ago because it really should be a model for how Europe could be doing immigration, right? Because Qatar, only about, what would that be, 10% of their population is actual Qatari. So you would think this is a lost country, right? I mean, hell, look at Germany or UK. They're swamped with Muslims. Those are still like 20% of the population or less, probably. So how do you have 90% foreigners in your country and only 10% are natives? Well, you do that by saying to the immigrants, you're never going to be a Qatari citizen. There's absolutely no pathway to that. You know, you'll never be a permanent residence, really. We can kick you out at any time. You have to leave at any time. And we only accept you in the first place if you contribute to us. So if you want to come and, you know, bring your family and build something here, something that will contribute to our society, you want to spend money to build infrastructure for us, then yeah, come on over. But we're not giving you handouts, but you don't come here to live off of us. It's the other way around. So actually, it's kind of an interesting case study in like, okay, migration isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world. It's the type of migration you have in Europe that destroys countries. You can actually have 90% foreigners in your country and still actually, instead of diminishing and destroying the native population, it uplifts and, you know, encourages the local population. Trump gave Qatar a security guarantee and isn't explaining why. Oh, does he need? I think I can. I think I can explain why. Because Israel bombed Qatar and killed the Hamas negotiators, betraying Trump and causing friction with our ally. So that was a sign to Israel, don't do that again. Is that complicated? It's like the shop owner who was shot in a robbery put bulletproof glass up for some reason. We don't know why. You don't know why? Okay. We have a video of this, actually. Pete Hegseth and a Qatari diplomat announcing this and explaining what it's going to be, this Air Force training facility. But the other reason that I think the Qatari population is actually important here, you know, when people talk about Israel and they go, well, it's a tiny little country the size of New Jersey. Who cares? How can a small country control a big country? That's impossible. Like, that's obviously a ridiculous claim, but it's especially ridiculous when you think about the Jewish diaspora and the people, you know, the millions of people around the world that are loyal to Israel while not living there exactly. Like, it's a completely different situation, obviously. But it matters because I feel like a lot of people are going, oh my God, Qatar is making an Air Force base in America. They're invading us, like as if this is sort of a part of the other stuff that we see where you do have mass migration of Muslims to places like Texas where they're building, you know, Islamic communities. Yeah, that's outrageous. But this is something entirely different. And the numbers matter here because if you took everybody from Qatar, if you took every single Qatari person in the world and shipped them all to America, it would still be like lower than the number of Somalis that we already have here in America. It would be 300,000, you know, people, which is a lot. If you're talking about dumping 300,000 Somalis in Minnesota, okay, that's going to be overwhelming. But it's like, I don't think this is part of this mass movement of Muslims by the millions taking places over. This seems to me like you have in Qatar almost this, when you say Qataris, what you're talking about is not even an ethnicity. It's like, it's a class. It's a caste. It's the ruling people of Qatar that have done a very good job, by the way, of diversifying their portfolio. Basically, they get a ton of money from oil, but then they put that money into education programs. And this is all being dishonestly presented by pro-Israel people, by, you know, the Israeli media, where they want to convince you that Qatar is actually the most influential country in America, not Israel. And it's like, for one thing, who even knows what the Qatar flag looks like? Who in America, do you think if you went on the street and asked Americans, what does the flag of Qatar look like? Anybody would know. I bet 98% of people would have no idea what it looks like. I only know what it looks like because every time I type Qatar, the little Qatar flag shows up as a suggested emoji on my phone. It's the only reason I know what the flag looks like. The point of that is, because no, there aren't congressmen hanging the Qatari flag in their office. There aren't congressmen and senators wearing Qatari pins on their lapels. It's a ridiculous claim to make that somehow Qatar has this outsized influence in our country. But there is obviously a growing alliance with them that, for the most part, I think benefits us. We have our biggest, base there. It's sort of central to the whole Middle East operation. Now, the reason why this is not necessarily positive for America is because there's a lot of discussion going around, a lot of chatter flying about saying that the whole reason that we're really doubling down and reinforcing our friendship with Qatar is because that's going to be the launch point for when we eventually go to war with Iran. If that's the case, that's obviously not good. So a lot of moving parts here, a lot of different factions involved. I don't think this Qatari airbase is something that is like a betrayal of Trump. I think it actually has more to do with creating another outlet in the Middle East that we can rely on more than Israel, if you want to know the truth. The truth about it, really, I think, is that the Trump administration is sick of trying to deal with Israel and sick of having Israel be more or less the only really reliable ally in that area. And to even call him a reliable ally, I get it. That's not even the case. But the point is, I think they want a force to counter Israel. I think they want to go, well, you know, Qatar can provide us with most of what we would be relying on you for. So, you know, maybe they're being edged out by Qatar, which is why I think they've been so hyper fixated and hyperventilating about Qatar for the last year or so. More on the other side. We'll get into exactly what this airbase will be.
You're not going to talk to me.
Fraud
and talk and over me.
New York residents
because you don't want
paid.
To hear what I have to say.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't
Go
you
ahead.
Just keep your mouth shut?
I've been on air for 31 years, but 28 years ago, I launched InfoWars, and it's changed the world thanks to all of your support of the operation. People like Hakeem Jeffries want us to shut up.
Can you, like, shut up?
That's what all their lawfare, all their lawsuits, all their attacks have been about, and they're passing anti-free speech laws in Canada, the UK, Europe. They're arresting people for even criticizing the government, and they're trying to bring that here. And that's why it's so important to try to keep InfoWars on the air. But regardless, these will be taken off very, very soon. We're going to continue on in the fight. But going forward, we'll no longer be called InfoWars. That's why it's so important now, which could be your last chance, to get all of the great shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it, that have InfoWars on it. The classic designs and some of the new designs. That's why we're launching the InfoWars Veteran Edition, or Veterans of the InfoWar. All of you that supported the InfoWar, you are the InfoWar. You are the modern Paul Revere's. You're the reason we're having this massive success here in the United States and around the world. You're the reason the globalists are desperate and admit their entire system is collapsing down around them. We're winning major battles, but we've not yet won the main war. And I have been proud to fight with you over these decades. I am so blessed and satisfied by the incredible effect we've all had together. So to celebrate 28 years of the InfoWar, 1997 to 2025, which could be the end of this incarnation of it, and I hope we go on. And regardless, the InfoWar never dies. It belongs to the people. It's the term for information warfare. They use lies. We use truth. But the URL and this building and all of that goes away, and it's like rocket engines, boosters falling off as the main craft goes into escape velocity and orbit. As John Paul Jones famously said, the founder of the U.S. Navy, I have not yet begun to fight. But it is important to get original InfoWars gear while you still can. All the classic designs and the new Veterans of the InfoWar designs that are limited edition and help keep this operation on the air and fund the new Alex Jones network that's being built. You've already seen some of the studios, the great work the crew's been doing. But it's much more expansive than what you've seen, and that'll be revealed very, very soon. And that's thanks to all of your support. So when you go to thealexjonesstore.com, you will have access to the widest selection, over 500 designs of Patriot t-shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. And all of the t-shirts are $19.97 in honor of the year that I launched InfoWars.com. itself. So again, thank you all for your support. And there's more.
But wait, there's more!
With promo code Hakeem at checkout, because he wants us all to shut up, and we're not going to shut up, get an additional 10% off right now. That's promo code Hakeem. Use it now.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
Hakeem Jeffries hopes you shut up. Hakeem Jeffries hopes you don't help keep us on the air, because then he can continue his tyrannical activity. That's why it's a revolutionary act when you support this operation and wear the Patriot apparel, available right now at thealexjonesstore.com, celebrating 28 years of the InfoWar. Thanks for keeping us on the air. And Hakeem, we've just begun to fight. We're not going to shut up.
Tree will get you nowhere. We are fighting to protect the health care of the American people in the face of an unprecedented Republican assault.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, talking about Qatar and the Israel ceasefire agreement. I'm going to be joined by Myron Gaines in the second hour, and as I was doing my news gathering today, I was setting off a lot of the more offensive things, so we'll talk about that with Myron. Well, I bet Myron's got some interesting things to say about that. But I got so many videos to go to, and then there's so much. There's too much, almost. Some of them aren't even that connected, so I'll finish up thoughts about this Qatari airbase and the Nobel Peace Prize and how the ceasefire is going and where it goes next here, and then we'll move on to some pretty incredible videos just in the topic of general domestic politics. But from CNN, Israel says ceasefire in effect as troops withdraw from parts of Gaza. Doctors Without Borders emergency coordinator based in central Gaza told CNN that the psychological consequences facing the population, particularly the children, is as consequential and worthy of humanitarian attention as the physical destruction in the enclave. And I believe that. But people are moving back in. It's just what they're moving back to is, well, we can go to clip 31 here and see exactly what Gaza looks like after the bombardments by Israel for 2 years straight. Let's watch. Yeah. Welcome home, Gazans. You know, good luck. just, I mean, have you ever seen anything like this? The scale of destruction. I'm still amazed and shocked by it, despite seeing these types of images for the last year and a half, at least. Yeah, they don't have much to go back to, which is why it's a good thing that Trump is getting all of these other wealthy nations to contribute to the rebuilding. Otherwise, you know, the only other outcome would be, okay, go back home, Gaza, and good luck with all that. You're on your own. Which, again, is why I think this agreement from Trump really has the potential to change the entire dynamic in the Middle East, which, you know, you would think, one would think might make Trump eligible for something like the Nobel Peace Prize, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that just be the case? And, you know, this is something that we'll talk about with Myron Gaines, because I was watching the whole show with him and Alex today, and I was really tempted to just like go in there and start talking to it, because I feel like we're just going to continue a lot of their conversation here. And especially when it comes to China and things like that. But I can't help it. I can't help it when you see something like the Nobel Peace Prize goes to some Venezuelan opposition leader. And you go, oh, wait, Trump has stopped 7 wars. He just got a peace deal to end the most brutal conflict possibly the world has ever seen. I mean, I'm not even sure that's an exaggeration. At least for the last, you know, 1,000 years, I can't think of another, you know, conflict that has this level of destruction. So why would you not give it to Trump? Why would you give it to this other person, this Venezuelan opposition leader that, frankly, I've never heard of? I mean, maybe she does good work, but is it worthy of the Nobel Peace Prize over Donald Trump, who has worked tirelessly to get peace in the world? Yeah, then she immediately dedicated her Nobel Peace Prize to President Trump, which is nice. And I can't help it but go, all right, clearly this isn't an award for peace. And this is what leftists do. This is what the globalists do. This is what they do every time. Same thing happened with any other award you want to mention, award show you want to mention, even just longstanding, you know, cultural icons. Leftists move in, globalists move in, take over something, completely divorce it from its intended purpose, and weaponize it politically. And that's what they did with the Nobel Peace Prize. And so you look at that and you go, okay, is this really about who did the most to bring about peace in the world, or is this now being used as a political weapon to try to highlight and elevate somebody as part of this color revolution they're trying to do in Venezuela to get rid of the Venezuelan leader, probably because the Venezuelan leader is friends with Iran and helps Hezbollah. Like that, it's like I can't help but to just assume that that's the actual reason that this is going to her. So it's like there's so many things like that, which sure, maybe it's because, you know, you see Israel around every corner, but it's like really, you know, this Venezuelan opposition leader, she's the one that deserves the most. I mean, even if you don't want to give it to Trump, I'm sure there are other people in other parts of the world that have done more to stand up for peace in the world. It just seems like a very convenient political weapon now to progress what is obviously an attempt by Israel to go around and destroy all of the networks that help Iran and, you know, give help to Iran. Yeah, world awaits blowback as the Nobel slips from Trump's hands. Well, it was dedicated to him by the woman who won it, so there's that. You know, who was the other guy? Juan Gallardo or something? They brought him to the State of the Union and were like, here's the president of Venezuela. That guy's not the president. What are you talking about? They've been desperate to overthrow Venezuela for a very long time, and so obviously the Nobel Peace Prize is no longer a peace prize. It is now a tool in the hands of the globalists trying to progress their agenda, and that's infuriating. Kind of like how you watch the Oscars, it ain't about what's the best movie, it's about what movie serves the purpose of the political elite the best. So, you know, they just take things over and destroy them and take them completely away from what they're intended to be and utterly destroy any, you know, honor and integrity these organizations once had. So well done, Nobel Peace Prize. You have officially announced that you are not worth the lead you're made out of. And remember, Obama won when he literally did nothing. He literally had not, I don't even think he'd been in office yet, and they were already giving him the Nobel Peace Prize. The drone strike president, yeah. All right, let's go to this video of Pete Hegseth and this Qatari gentleman announcing the new airbase. Oh, do we not have that video? Guys, we can bring 14. Okay, let's roll that.
We also value the close cooperation between Doha and Washington that led to the signing of the Gaza peace plan on October 8th. This historic achievement underscores what can be accomplished when our nations work together with courage and trust, amongst other partners such as Egypt and Turkey. Mm-hmm. We further welcome today's signing of the letter of acceptance establishing a Qatari Amir Air Force facility and Mountain Home Air Base in Idaho. This step strengthens interborder policies, enhance joint readiness, and advance our shared defense goals. Mr. Secretary, together we will continue to deepen this strategic partnership in pursuit of lasting peace and shared security. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
We wish you that. Sign now.
Sign trade. How about that?
Yeah. All right. So they're signing the agreement there. And like I said, I was looking into this and sort of just using AI and going, is this normal? Is this something that we normally do? And it kind of is. It kind of isn't. It, you know, the fact that they're calling it a Qatari airbase in Idaho is kind of unique. Usually it'll just be, well, it's a training, you know, it's a training agreement where people will come over and stay in our bases for a little while so they can be trained on American weapons or whatever it is. This does seem a little bit different. But again, I think in this case, it really is a matter of America is using Qatar, not Qatar using America. And if you want to know more about this, you should watch. There's a YouTuber called Leather Apron Club, Qatari Air Force facility to be built at USAF Air Base in Idaho. Defense Secretary Hegseth says, so yeah, I mean, we're sort of annexing Gaza is how it feels to me. It feels to me like we're kind of annexing Gaza. Like we're kind of going, yeah, you know, you guys, you know, you'll have an Air Force. You can buy our designs, buy our weapons, train in our facilities, and then do our bidding. Won't that be nice for you? Almost like a satrapy. That's sort of how I feel like Qatar is being wielded now by the Trump administration, almost as a satrapy in the old Assyrian mode, if you're a fan of history. Right? Like the Assyrians or the Persians never had a navy. They would just go to Lebanon, take over the Phoenicians, and go, that's our navy now. You work for us now. You're going to be our navy from now on. And we're going to treat you well, and, you know, we'll be partners in this, but when we need a navy, it's your navy we'll be using. I feel like that's kind of how it's going with Qatar. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I'm just personally not super threatened by Qatar having military people here. I don't think Trump would do something that was ill-advised in that regard. Pentagon to host Qatari F-15 jets and pilots at Idaho Air Base is the headline from disclosed.tv. Now, I want to go to some other videos because I know once Myron gets in here, we're just going to start talking and probably not have time for some of these videos. So I want to get to these while we can. I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com to take advantage of the 1997 InfoWars Mega Sale. Shirts, every shirt in the store is now $19.97 in honor of InfoWars' birth year. Plus, you're getting 50% off CMOS gummies. We have a lot of new designs that everybody likes. I'm seeing like everybody at the office is wearing one of these veterans of the InfoWars shirt. Rob Dew was wearing the hat earlier. Looks very cool with that sort of VFW style on it. Get yours today at $19.97 special mega sale price, thealexjonesstore.com. Make sure to go there today to keep us on the air in the fight and continuing to really dominate and really find ourselves in a strange position where there almost isn't a substantial left to even fight against. And the left that does exist is so insane, I'm not even sure they're worth talking to. The Virginia Attorney General race has been a, you know, focus of a lot of people because it's showing some very disturbing trends in our political sphere. You've got text messages released that show the candidate for Attorney General basically saying, you know, I wish I could kill my opponent. I wish his children were dead. Just all these horrible things that are just obviously incredibly objectionable, even in a personal conversation. Like, people are like, well, you know, this was a text message from years ago. It's like, okay, you think you'd ever find a message like that from me? Ever? No matter how far you go back. Who says stuff like this? It's very disturbing. It's disturbing enough that they would release it. Then even more disturbing is the entire Democrat establishment shrugs and says that's fine and doesn't condemn him. And then actually 12% of responders to polls say it made them like him more. It's like, okay, I don't even know what we do at this point when people actually want politicians to be like threatening death to their opponents. This is an issue. This is an issue with our Democratic Republic. We can't go on like this. Again, I don't know what exactly we do here because Democrats are fine with it. Like, I don't even know how to explain it. Well, let's go to these videos. It's this is a debate, I believe, for governor. Yeah, so these are two women who are running to be Virginia governors, to be the governor of Virginia. Abigail Spanberger and Winsome Earl Sears. Winsome Earl Sears is the Republican, and she asks this Abigail Spanberger character about endorsing Jay Jones, and she refuses to and refuses to condemn what he said. I mean, just watch and understand, like, the Democrats right now are looking around and going, I'm not going to gain anything by condemning this, so I better just double down on it. I better just, you know, signal to my followers that, no, I agree, the right wing deserves death. And, you know, again, in any other situation in American history, the American people would be outraged by this. The American people wouldn't stand for this. But the American people are the ones driving this to a large degree now. I don't know what to do about that. Let's go to clip number two here.
Thank you, Ms. Spanberger. I didn't hear an answer there on the endorsement issue, so I want to just make sure. Will you continue to endorse Jay Jones to be the next Attorney General of Virginia? And were you aware of these text messages before they released? You have 30 seconds.
In fact, it appears that it was those who released the text messages and held them for years. So the public was unaware who had knowledge of these text messages for many hours.
What did you do about it?
I learned of these text messages the day that they came out, and I denounced them as soon as I learned of them.
She denounces murder.
And importantly, at this point, as we move forward, the voters now have this information that was withheld for them.
You're running for
presumably for political reasons, but the voters now have the information, and it is up to voters to make an individual choice based on this information.
Ms. Spanberger, I understand what you're saying about the voters, but for you yourself, do you still continue to endorse Jay Jones? 15 seconds, yes or no?
We are all running our individual races. I believe my opponent has said that about her lieutenant governor nominee.
Ms. Earl Sears.
And it's up to every person to make their own decision. I am running my race to serve Virginia, and that is what I intend to do.
Thank you, Ms. Spanberger. We just want to clarify, you know, what you're saying is that as of now, you still endorse Jay Jones as Attorney General.
I'm saying as of now, it's up to every voter to make their own individual decision. I am running for governor. I am accountable for the words that I say, for the acts that I take, for the policies that I have put out.
Thank you.
I am responsible for the policies I put out and the work I will endeavor to do tirelessly for the people of
governor.
Virginia.
Thank you, Ms. Spanberger.
This is legitimately insane. Her response, it just genuinely doesn't make any sense. And I wish people could see through this. I mean, what does these being withheld have anything to do with anything? Right? I mean, it's like, okay, the text messages were released. They're not saying they're fake. They weren't saying they were fabricated. They're not saying, well, these don't really, they're released by somebody who's our enemy and we aren't confirmed. No, they're like, yeah, those are real. Yeah, they happened. But like, they happened a while ago. So that's the real scandal. So the real thing is that these were withheld for a while. It's like, what? It doesn't make any sense. What are you talking about? You imagine this? It's like murder trial. They're like, yeah, so he confessed to the murder, but they withheld that recording for a year. It's like, so what? What are you talking about? He confessed to a murder. That's the thing that we're concerned about here. And her response is very telling. I guess that's up to the voters and what they want to choose. So what she's saying is it's perfectly valid if, as a voter, you approve of and want to choose the person who wishes death upon the children of their enemies. I get, you know, that's a perfectly valid thing. Like, is it that hard to say, yeah, the voters can, you know, make their own choice, but as for me, I don't want to be associated with somebody who's fantasizing about murdering children? I'm like speechless at how we even got to this point. And will you denounce and distance yourself from a candidate who's been revealed in private conversations like, I just wish I could kill their children? And she's like, you know, if that's the position that our voters are in favor of, that's on their conscience. That's up to them. And I refuse to condemn it. Oh, you can't condemn that. It's something about this, the liberal equality mindset, where it's like, all positions are valid. Hey, not wanting to kill your opponents, wanting to kill your opponents. These are just two different opinions, right? It's a signal to everybody. We all get what she's saying. We all understand exactly what the message is. She approves. She absolutely approves, obviously. Yeah, the sheriffs and the law enforcement, they're obviously infuriated by this and actually saying they would refuse to work with the attorney general that would say stuff like that. Because how could you ever trust them? How could you ever trust them to behave in an appropriate way when they clearly feel like Republicans deserve death for their political views? And we actually played this in a different order. Let's go to clip 19 here. This was actually the question that the moderator was sort of doubling down on. But here's Winsome Earl Spears putting it to her opponent. Will you condemn this, and why not? Let's watch.
Well, I think, as everybody knows, I'm a Christian. I'm a Christian before I'm a Republican, and I'm required to forgive people. And it's hard sometimes when somebody has abused you, etc., but it's something you must do, because not to forgive is almost like, as someone said, you drink poison thinking that it's going to affect the other person. And I want to live a decent life, and I don't want to not have peace in my life. And so as I've said before, I would not say that. So that's why I'm wondering why my opponent won't say, beyond it's abhorrent and disgusting, why she won't say it is not okay and that he must leave the race, because Jay Jones advocated the murder, Abigail, the murder of a man, a former speaker, as well as his children who were 2 years, 2 and 5 years old. You have little girls. What would it take him pulling the trigger? Is that what would do it? And then you would say he needs to get out of the race? Abigail, you have nothing to say? Abigail.
Stares ahead, smirking.
What if he said about your three children? Is that when you would say he should get out of the race, Abigail?
Dude.
You're running to be governor.
Hello, are you a human being? She just doesn't respond to it. She's just smirking. It's a perfectly valid question. But the thing is, these people really are, they're not human beings. You saw it right there. She's like, Abigail, hello, I'm asking you a question. Abigail's just like staring straight ahead, because there's no good answer. Because the answer is obvious. And she doesn't want to say that. So she's pretending she doesn't hear it, like a child. And she'll probably end up the governor. You know, honestly, she'll probably end up the governor for this. And that really is a political situation I do not know how to amend. But there's another great example from this debate. It's clip 6 here. Another question being asked to this soulless husk of a human being, where again, the answer is obvious, but she can't say it because she is confined in a cell of deception called the Democratic Party. And you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. I think this highlights and illustrates the divide between Democrats and Republicans maybe better than like any other clip we've shown. Let's go to Winsome Earl Spears asking Abigail Spinberg or whatever her name is a very simple question that would have a very obvious answer if honesty and humanity had any part of her composition. Let's watch.
And that's why I'm asking my opponent, if your little girl comes home and said she was forced to undress in a locker room with a biological boy, what would you say? She's crying. What would you say? Are you not going to answer?
She's not going to answer. She's going to pretend she doesn't hear you because she's not a human being. But in reality, it's because there is no answer to this on their side. The obvious answer is she would, of course, never stand for that. But she can't say that because saying that is to say, I don't want trans men in the bathroom. And that is, of course, a red line that she can't cross for her psychopathic, brainwashed Democratic constituents. She can't come out against men being in women's locker rooms. So the answer in reality, her position should be to say, I'd be fine with that. But she can't say that either. What, she going to sit up at a debate stage for the gubernatorial race and say, actually, I'd be fine if an adult man wanted to get naked with my young daughter? But that's her position. It's not like this is a trick question. This is literally just like asking about your stance, asking about your policy, a policy that, by the way, dominates the political conversation. For some godforsaken reason, transgenderism has become this major political topic today, and they don't have a consistent stance. They really don't even have a stance. There's only two options. Either you're okay with grown men getting naked with your 5-year-old daughter, or you hate trans people. So which is it, lady? She can't answer. It's not a trick question. It's literally the impossible nature of their core ideology. It is without logic. It's without reason. It's without the ability to even justify it. Do you want men in the shower with your daughter or not? If the answer is no, then okay, you're on our side. No trans men in women's bathrooms. If you say yes, what the hell's wrong with you? You absolute freak. Somebody should take your children away for their own protection. So that's just the natural outcome of the level of absurdity that the mainstream foundational democratic ideology has come to at this point. They genuinely cannot answer basic questions about their own beliefs because either one reveals that they're either pathological and insane or just liars. So choke on it.
Hakeem Jeffries, the petty tyrant, wants you to shut up.
Why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
He doesn't want you to have free speech. He doesn't want you to be able to exercise your views and stand up for yourself. That's because he, like other tyrants in the EU, Canada, the UK, the Democratic Party, can't win with their ideas that are so unpopular. They can only silence people. So in honor of him trying to tell all of us to shut up.
Can you shut up.
You get an additional 10% off right now at TheAlexJonesStore.com on top of all the other big sales with promo code Hakeem. It's that simple. You know Hakeem Jeffries and the Democratic Party have been attacking us, attacking you, attacking President Trump, trying to bully us into submission, but it's not going to work. And the larger store sale that's going on right now is all of the Patriot t-shirts, the Patriot apparel, the widest selection, some of the best designs are 1997 in honor of myself and the crew launching Infowars.com in 1997, 28 years of the Infowar. So that is the Veterans of the Infowar sale. And on top of it, 10% off at checkout with the promo code Hakeem. And there's a bunch of limited edition Infowars, Veterans of the Infowars shirts, all the original designs and more. Because if Infowars is shut down and the bad guys get the name, they've said they're going to try to stop us from using the term Infowar in the future. But it's a generic term. It belongs the world. They're going to try to misrepresent it with The Onion and Bloomberg, who are running all of this. It's going to blow up in their face big time. But regardless, for original InfoWars designs and these limited editions that help fund this operation and the future operation, the Alex Jones Network backup, it is critical to get these right now because it could be your last chance. It's all coming to a head right now. So thank you all for your support. You are veterans of the InfoWar, and I salute you all.
folks. We'll be joined shortly by Myron Gaines. You know, I don't envy the Democrats right now. They really, I don't know what to make of them at this point. It's like their policies are so utterly asinine and inconsistent. They cannot answer a simple question about them almost ever. And then simultaneously, you've got them in these situations where they either have to completely reverse everything they've ever said, or they have to try to justify the unjustifiable. I think you'll see what I mean. Already, we played a clip of CBS News admitting that Jeffrey Epstein probably didn't kill himself, that the crime scene was manipulated and nothing was done correctly, and the, you know, assumption that he committed suicide was kind of baseless. It's like, okay, do you want to extend that a little bit farther? So what does that mean? What does that mean? That means either he's not dead or somebody else killed him, and that the entire investigation was covered up. Who has the power to do that type of thing? Like, it actually invokes a lot more questions that they're not entertaining, which is interesting. But even the fact that they would say it at all is shocking and sort of a watershed moment. Here's Anderson Cooper, clip 38 here, admitting that Letitia James did politically persecute Donald Trump, and that her prosecution now about her mortgage fraud is not political. She did actually commit the crime. So again, this is like, should really invalidate everything they ever say, because it's the exact opposite of what they've been telling us for the last 6 years. Now they admit that trying to throw Trump in jail for 400 years was entirely a fraud. Okay, that beggars some questions as well. Let's watch.
The system is not supposed to work.
Jeff, I mean, according to PolitiFact, the day after she was elected in 2018, Letitia James was asked by a community activist if she was going to sue President Trump, and she replied, quote, oh, we're going to definitely sue him. We're going to be a real pain in the ass. He's going to know my name personally. I mean, that's not a great look for somebody who has just been elected or just been campaigning, who hasn't even looked, I guess, deeply at any evidence.
Well, that's, you know, that we live in a system where attorneys general and district attorneys in the United States, unlike almost any other country, are elected officials, are politicians. So they run for office making political statements. That's how our system works. It's not pretty. I don't think it's a great system, but there's nothing uncommon about it. The other point to make, though, is just because she made inappropriate comments, that doesn't mean she should get indicted for fraud years later. I mean, we're not supposed to live in a system of that kind of tit for tat. Criminal cases are supposed to stand or fall on their own merits.
David, I mean, there's no evidence that Letitia James's indictment stems from some widespread audit of thousands of mortgage
Again, like, so what's going on? So you admit that Letitia James's prosecution of Trump was utterly baseless and obviously fraudulent, and that she campaigned on that. And the other guy's like, well, yeah, that's true, but that's normal. Oh, is it? Okay, show me one other example. Show me one other example ever of an attorney general, somebody running to be attorney general, saying, vote for me and I'll go after this politician for you. Because that's what Letitia James says. Even the quote that Anderson Cooper provided, while, you know, very telling and very shocking that he would present that information, the things she actually said were even worse. She said, if you vote for me, I'll go into the office, I'll sue Donald Trump, and then I'll go home. But she was like, that's all I'm going to do. I'm not going to try to stop crime. I'm not going to lower crime. I'm not going to put criminals in jail. I'm going to go after Trump and sue him for whatever, and that's all I'm going to do all day. That's what she ran on. Could not be more obvious. Also CNN, you know, here's another clip from CNN where they took a different tack, but this is what happens when you are actually evil and have been engaged in criminality for so long. You don't actually have a good excuse. Let's go to clip 7 here.
Aside for a second, what Tish James, and again, we're still getting the details, but if it's related to this mortgage issue, I mean, this is something that everyone in America, or many people at least, if you're lucky enough to be able to buy a house in America, you deal with this. Right? The federal government doesn't go after all of these people for doing this.
Everybody commits mortgage fraud, don't you know? Everybody cheats when they apply for a mortgage loan, don't they?
Alex Jones, patriot, a man they tried to silence,
They came for his voice, his platform, his life. But they can't stop him. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's most unstoppable force. Alex Jones will be that man. Better than he was before. Better. Stronger. Faster. Louder.
Go to alexjonesapp.com, the number one news app in the world.
Yes!
You're listening to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at x.com.
All right, welcome back, folks. I'm telling you, they don't know what to do anymore. Like, they don't know what to do anymore. They're admitting that Epstein didn't kill himself. I mean, one strategy, maybe that's why this Abigail woman's strategy makes sense. You might as well just pretend you can't hear the question, because they don't have answers. Maybe that's actually the appropriate response, is when they're, you know, when these questions are put to them, that they can't answer, they just pretend they can't hear. They just stare straight ahead like robots that haven't been turned on. It's like, okay. All right. Well, I didn't really work with like newscasters, CNN. You got to actually say something. And so they're taking some interesting tacks there as well. Anderson Cooper admitting that, yeah, Letitia James did totally, you know, violate her oath of office by weaponizing her position to go after not just Trump, but places like InfoWars, and just use her position instead of trying to actually lower crime in the state of New York. She's going after InfoWars for selling toothpaste and Donald Trump for a loan that he paid off. I mean, it's completely ridiculous, but it's especially ridiculous because, one, CNN's like, everybody does this. Who doesn't commit mortgage fraud here or there? And for one thing, they absolutely would go after you for that. I mean, have you ever, like, tried to do something like that? It's one of the absurdities of the anarcho-tyranny that we live under. You know, you can have like illegal immigrants that own businesses somehow, but God forbid you try to, you know, you even accidentally mess something up as you register your business, they'll come down on you like a ton of bricks. Yeah, Attorney General James orders Alex Jones to stop selling fake coronavirus treatments. It's toothpaste, you psychos. Cost us $500,000 to fight that. Yeah, she should go to jail. She needs to go to jail. No, not everybody commits mortgage fraud, CNN. What a hilarious way to try to cover up this crime. And ironically, if you do look at the cases involved, if anything, Trump's case is what people actually do, where you go, well, you know, if I'm putting this up as collateral, I'm going to put the maximum amount that it could possibly be worth. I'm just going to not lie, but, you know, on the spectrum of how much this house is worth, I'm going to say it's at this end of the spectrum, because I could possibly get that. So I'll say that. That's what he was accused of doing. Of course, he never actually did that. He actually put down its exact worth. The bank double checked it and guaranteed it. And then he paid off the loan. So it wasn't even a crime in the first place. Even if that is what he did, that's the thing that people do. Not lie about where they're, you know, hey, you're going to get a better rate if this is your permanent residence. Is it your permanent residence? Yeah, I'll say yes, even though it's not. Like, no, you can't do that. That's just a blatant lie. That's just a blatant fabrication, act of blatant dishonesty. And there's no getting around this, because either it is, you know, the whole thing is that Letitia James bought a house in Northern Virginia, probably because she thought she'd be appointed to something by Kamala Harris. By the way, again, for all these naysayers about Trump, and I've had my fair share of criticisms about Trump, but come on. We are in a timeline in which Letitia James is being indicted. Maybe she's not being indicted for what she should be indicted for, which would be something like sedition or treason or, you know, violating her oath as attorney general, obviously, to weaponize it politically against her opponents, which we keep hearing is the death of democracy and, you know, the actions of a dictator, right? That's what she was doing. So I think charging her with that would be more appropriate. But you're in a timeline where she's getting indicted and could very well go to jail for like 10 years. If justice is served, if nobody's above the law. The alternative timeline, she's attorney general. The alternative timeline with Kamala Harris winning, Tish James isn't going to jail. She's going to the White House. She's going to become the attorney general. So thank God we don't live in that timeline. But she probably was expecting to be appointed to something by Kamala Harris. So she buys a house in Northern Virginia, says, yes, this is going to be my permanent residence. This is my permanent residence, which conflicts with requirements to be attorney general in New York, which say your permanent residence has to be in New York for you to serve as attorney general of New York. So it's one or the other. Either she wasn't attorney general of New York because she did not qualify because she did not live in New York, or she lied on her mortgage application to get a better rate, which is just a roundabout way of saying theft. She stole from the bank. So it's just like, this is ridiculous that they're trying to cover this up by going, we all commit mortgage fraud, don't we? A little mortgage fraud here or there never hurt anybody, right? I mean, sure, we keep calling Trump a convicted felon over actually something significantly less worse, less bad, as what Letitia James is being accused of. And then if you apply that standard, we've shown that people like Hillary Clinton were literally charged with exactly what Donald Trump was charged with, never spent a day in court, and actually had the whole thing covered up by the DNC, who paid like a $50,000 fine and it went away. For Trump, on the other hand, they upgrade it from a misdemeanor to a felony. They circumvent the, you know, restrictions of statute of limitations. They just do everything they possibly can to get the conviction. And it's totally fraudulent. And it is actually something that a lot of presidents or, you know, whatever political campaigns do, but that only Trump is punished for. Again, it's just, it's like exhausting trying to ferret out and deconstruct just the overwhelming amount of lies that we're confronted with on a daily basis. But it's not about the individual lies. Again, it's about the overall mindset of the Democrats, where they're at right now, how they're trying and failing to deal with the inconsistencies in their own belief system. It has been saying some ridiculous stuff or some very normal and obvious stuff that completely contradicts everything else they've been saying for the last 10 years. So when you have people saying, yeah, Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself, and Anderson Cooper admitting that the Tish James convictions were completely fraudulent and that she did commit mortgage fraud, like that is what they should be saying, because that's obviously true and observable from anybody with a double-digit IQ. The weird thing about it is that they've been saying the opposite for the last 10 years. So do we want to confront that or just pretend that last decade of dishonesty didn't happen? I guess we're going with that. But boy, are they getting more stupid. Let's go to clip number three here. This is MSNBC's Chris Hayes. I guess just trying to come up with a reason to call RFK Jr. bad. Like, I'm telling you, the depths of desperation that the Democratic Party is reaching at this point is truly something to behold. Let's go to Chris Hayes here, MSNBC's Chris Hayes, condemning RFK Jr. for, you know, caring about health. Let's watch. Let's go to clip three, guys.
I always thought that the autism vaccine story was about vaccines, insofar as this was a reason vaccines were bad. But one of the things that's been very strange to me about watching the development of the perversion of the public health system under RFK is the obsession with autism. So it's like it's on both ends, and that autism is this like creeping specter that's, you know, this society is awash in it. And when RFK talks about it, he talks about these kids are never going to have a life. They're never going to go to a baseball game. And just in these really like profoundly kind of derogatory ways that I have to say, with a lot of people who have various autism diagnoses that are close to me in my life, many of these people don't react great to the rhetoric that has emanated from the White House. But it has become this strange, I think strange kind of obsession and this kind of cultural touchstone.
Strange obsession with autism. I mean, again, what is there even to say about that? It's just like at this point, they got pregnant women chugging Tylenol to prove Trump wrong. And according to, you know, a couple stories, some of the women actually killing themselves or losing their babies because of that. But hey, I guess it's worth it. And now they're like condemning people caring about autism as if caring about a disease and wanting to eliminate a disease, a malfunction, a disorder means that you hate the people with the disorder. Just apply this to literally any other illness, sickness, disorder, condition. It makes no damn sense. If I say I want to eliminate cancer, does that mean I hate cancer patients? Chris Hayes, are you insane? Are you an idiot? If you want to cure an affliction, it's because you love the people with the affliction and you want to help them. I'm telling you, folks, I don't know what's happening with the left right now. All yesterday, you know, we showed all these videos of you know, either people like Hassan Piker or whoever else. They are panicking. They have no idea what they even believe. They can't actually express their positions out loud, or else everybody will see how absurd they sound. They're celebrating autism and trying to downplay Letitia James being a criminal by suggesting that everybody commits fraud. What's the big deal? It's like, what are you people even saying at this point? What is even happening? I really, you know, now that the more we think about it, Abigail Spanberger, she's got the right idea. Just pretend to be robots, left. Just stop talking, stare straight ahead, smirk like you know something that you don't, and just shut up, because you're only digging the hole deeper for yourselves. Every time you try to talk, it either reveals that you've been liars this entire time and finally decided to tell the truth for some reason, or it just shows the desperation and the lengths to which you'll go to try to undercut obviously good things. Crazy, really. Just, we need to do something about these. Like, we need to do something about these people, okay? I don't know what it is exactly, but they can't just be allowed to be walking around, you know, free like this. They'll hurt themselves. We're going to talk a lot about Antifa with Myron. Myron's getting back to the studio. No, long story, but he'll be here soon. He's probably going to stay with us till the end of the show. So we'll have plenty of time with Myron Gaines as soon as he gets back to the studio. But let's go to clip number 10 here. This is a video put out by the White House, I believe, about Antifa. Do I have the right one here? That, again, it's wonderful to see this. It's fantastic to see this. It's so long overdue. I'll show you Jimmy Kimmel on the other side, but it's, you know, it's just to the point where, like, even trying to argue this with people, gaslighting has never been this blatant or extreme. I'm being blinded by the gaslight here. But this is Pam Bondi and a few others after the White House roundtable about Antifa, talking about the threat that this network of communist agitators poses to the American people. Let's watch.
Antifa beats journalists. Antifa attacks our police stations. They attack our courthouses. They dox our law enforcement officers. No more. They are a terrorist group, and we are coming after them.
We are here at the White House today to unmask Antifa, to follow the money all the way to the top. If you want to get to the bottom of who is fomenting this chaos and violence in our country, you must follow the money.
I was a mainstream reporter in Seattle for 10 years before I quit mainstream media, in part due to its refusal to acknowledge the dangers of Antifa and radical left-wing violence.
Part of the problem that we have is that a lot of people refuse to believe that Antifa is real. It is just a made-up thing, but I have seen them. They are real, they are dangerous, and they are violent.
They are an organized, systemic, international criminal enterprise. And what the FBI is going to do is trace the money, follow the funds, and find every single person that was involved in funding the riots and the violent acts of criminality that they're perpetrating on our street.
I've watched Antifa brutally beat, harass, and threaten Americans in the street, but all of that ends with the Trump administration.
I was brutally attacked and almost killed by Antifa in the streets of Seattle. All of my colleagues have been attacked. I can't think of a single one who hasn't. Violence against journalists and police officers in our streets can't stand.
Just days ago, I was in the Portland jailhouse, and now I'm in the White House. This administration is built different.
And Antifa's days are numbered.
And I want to thank President Donald Trump for designating Antifa a terrorist organization. And I'm looking forward to the FBI and the DOJ hunting down these people like the terrorists that they are.
All I got to say, it's a bad day to be Antifa.
And Antifa's days of using violence and intimidation against their political opposition are over.
And I've continued to report on them over the years, despite the threats of violence and actual violence that's happened, because I owe a thank you to this country, the United States, for settling my parents who were victims of communism in Vietnam.
1 month ago, Charlie Kirk was murdered by a violent leftist. We all saw it, and we all saw thousands of leftists celebrate it. Antifa symbols were found on the bullet casings of the gun used to shoot and kill my friend.
We won't take it anymore. President Trump is not going to stand for it. And I'm so grateful that we have a leader in the White House that understands how we need to fight these sophisticated networks and how we need to take these terrorists out.
I've been attacked by Antifa, doxxed by Antifa, harassed by Antifa, but we're not standing down. We're now coming for you.
You know, really brilliant. White House puts that out. Make no mistake. Antifa is a radical terrorist network, radical terrorist organization that explicitly calls for the overthrow of the U.S. government, law enforcement authorities, and the rule of law at large. Under the Trump administration, Antifa's days are over. You know, it's great to see. Antifa's obviously taking this seriously. The leaders of Antifa have all like fled for Europe at this point, but they're finding that a little bit difficult because now that they're deemed terrorists, they're like not being allowed into certain countries. Mark Bray, the author of the Antifa Handbook, got stopped at an airport in Spain and wasn't allowed any further. So good. Good. These people, I mean, it's too much. It is too much for too long. It's time to wrap it up. Benny Johnson was there in D.C. Apparently they arrested a man who had been sending explicit death threats to him using, ironically, the very same language that the attorney, the candidate for Attorney General Jay Jones used, showing that, you know, these people are very much being encouraged and being, you know, not even if not directly bolstered by the Democrats in power. Let's go to Benny Johnson here, clip 18.
The individual who wrote me described why he wanted me dead. I was a white cis Christian Trump supporter. They described in great detail how I would be killed in an open field, just like Charlie, how much blood would come out of my head and neck when it was blown off. This individual described orphaning my four beautiful children and widowing my wife with great joy. You might want to say another left-wing radical, another extremist. And to that, I would like to direct your attention to the state of Virginia, where Democrats have nominated and are about to vote for the chief law enforcement officer in that state, a man who has done the exact same thing, an individual who's calling for the assassination by bullets of Republicans that he disagrees with, the killing of their children, the slaughtering of, as he says, little fascists. Are my four innocent, beautiful children little fascists? Violence has been mainstreamed by the Democrat Party. It is not extremist, it is mainstream. And we need a moment of reckoning here. This has to stop. This cycle must end. Is any Democrat courageous enough to disavow violence?
So that's Benny Johnson. An individual has been arrested for threatening to kill my wife, my four children, and me. He sent a letter to my home saying he hated our views and wanted us dead. He's being charged federally and faces prison time, which is good. And we do need to make a big deal out of this to let people know, like, you're not going to get away with this. You are going to get busted by the police. And again, that's what we need. We need the police to act on this. We need the police to protect us, not because we actually need them, not because we are incapable of protecting ourselves, not because Antifa is this overwhelming force that the American people, you know, are powerless against. I mean, come on. but it's like we don't want it to go there. We don't want to have to send the good old boys to round up Antifa. Do it with the lawful authorities. Throw them in jail. Make an example of them. They're breaking the law. They're attacking us. They're threatening us. Do something about this so we don't have to. And it really is as simple as that. We have more here. Let's go to clip. We have to go to that on the other side because I've got, you know, Glenn Beck actually did a great job of showing all of the various funding mechanisms supporting Antifa through various NGOs that are, of course, funded by our tax dollars. Because at the end of the day, whether it's Black Lives Matter or Antifa or the open societies and any of these organizations tearing America apart from the inside, we're paying for our own destruction. They're using our tax dollars, siphoning them away to fund their destructive and subversive activities. It's outrageous, but it goes on pretty much unabated. But if you listen to Jimmy Kimmel, Antifa doesn't exist. Let's go to clip 17 here. This, again, just goes in line with everything we've been talking about, the absolute madness of the left, where, again, I grew up saying truth is treason in the empire of lies. I don't think I understood that. I don't think I really understood the level of lying that we could reach. And it's finally becoming apparent just how unbelievably dishonest a huge number of people will be in pursuit of their own destructive deconstructionist goals. Here's Jimmy Kimmel just lying blatantly to his audience in a way that is really kind of shocking. Let's watch.
You understand. There's no Antifa. This is an entirely imaginary organization. There is not an Antifa. This is no different than if they announced they rounded up a dozen Decepticons. We've captured the chupacabra, everyone. And then it was Trump's turn to ratchet up the rhetoric with fiery images conjured from no one has any idea where.
No one has any idea. Couldn't possibly be Portland, where Antifa has laid siege to a federal building for over 100 days at this point. Couldn't possibly be from the 400 riots that have occurred in the last 10 years with Antifa represented wearing a uniform, waving the flags with their logo on it. But they don't exist. But they don't exist. I'm telling you, folks, first of all, Jimmy Kimmel stole my joke because that was always my position because. And again, I don't have the words to illustrate this. Like, if you don't understand this, I don't know if I can express it to you in a way to really get it through to you. Jimmy Kimmel just said, in no uncertain words, Antifa does not exist. They don't exist. Meanwhile, he'll be the first to tell you white supremacy is an existential crisis in this country. That violent white supremacy is the number one threat. After all, the president said it, didn't they? Didn't Joe Biden come out with that announcement? Yeah, look, these people don't exist. That sign doesn't exist. Those air horns don't exist. All these people, they don't exist. That flag doesn't exist. None of this exists, folks. They don't exist in France. They don't exist in Germany. They don't exist in the UK. They don't exist, folks. Look at all of this crazy footage that must have come from AI or something because Antifa doesn't exist, folks. Now, these are just your, friendly neighborhood lads out for a stroll that Trump wants to demonize for some reason. Can you believe it? I mean, do you believe it? Do you believe what Jimmy Kimmel is telling you? Well, he tells you that white supremacy is the number one threat, which actually genuinely doesn't exist. Which is more like Bigfoot? White supremacy in America in 2025 or Antifa, the people who are, putting people in the hospital to this day?
So you were just telling me that you had a brain disease.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking. Kennedy literally gobbles.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I was in a wheelchair. That methylene blue, I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures without it. And I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I started taking it. And boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
It is a miracle. It's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue, and I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
My kids take it. My wife takes it. Everybody takes it.
I used to have to take, $10,000 a week?
Right.
To get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take two pills or drink it once a day
right. And
pay what? I don't know, $30, $40 a bottle of it?
Depends on what the sale is, yeah.
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Yeah!
I'm not paid to say this, not one dime. This is the best product you guys have ever had. You guys got to order it at the alexjonesstore.com.
Our methylene blue, medical grade, made in Florida, is incredible. Cleans out your mitochondria, clarity, focus, energy. You've seen the rave reviews of every guest we've had on. It's game changing.
I feel like, wow, there's power in coalescing all your thoughts.
Did you hear our last guest, what she said happened to her?
No. What?
She said brain fog just lifted.
That's what it feels like.
I feel lighter. It's really interesting. I almost like feel smarter.
This stuff kicked in and it like instantly I just felt like this weird meditative energy. I don't know how to explain it. I don't feel jittery. I just felt like instantly like I went from 5 hours of sleep like I got last night to like 10 hours. I don't know how to explain it. This stuff's new to me, but I like it. Methylene blue works for me.
I feel it in my head and neck too. My brain's going really fast. I really like it.
Unlimited populous power!
Volunteer power!
You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus.
I do feel like it's eliminated the brain fog a lot.
I do subscribe to the methylene blue. I feel better. I feel like I'm 25.
Like I said, I've been taking the methylene blue, and it is freaking awesome. I actually subscribe monthly now to it, and I got a couple other people that I work with. I gave them it, and they did the same thing.
I'm jacked up on the methylene blue. It's the best thing you guys have ever had. Please go to the Alex Jones.
Powered by Methylene Blue, Ultra Methylene Blue at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Switching up the war room vibe here. Setting the mood to talk about a bunch of domestic terrorists who are destroying our country from the inside out. By the way, Trump's about to go live talking about a prescription drug proposal he's putting forward, TrumpRx.gov. So we'll go to that whenever he's live. I did not know this was happening today. I'm not sure if this was... If this was announced too far in the future, but we'll go to that whenever Trump starts talking. But I want to go now to this video by Glenn Beck where he breaks down just a few of the funding mechanisms that Antifa enjoys courtesy of U.S. taxpayers. Here's Glenn Beck breaking down how our government funds its own destruction. Let's watch.
And then you have this, funding sources. Now, this is interesting. Again, who do you write a check to? This is split between nonprofits and foundations, also crowdfunding sources. Now, I already mentioned the Tides Foundation, one of the darkest of the dark left-wing radical money funnels on the planet. You know, who knows all the trails that lead back to Tides? But just for starters, let's look at these. Tides Foundation funds an organization called Alliance for Global Justice. Money from here. They refunnel money to groups like Refuse Fascism, They also give to the National Lawyers Guild, over $1 million from 2018 to 2019 alone. Are you going to write a check for $1 million to a leaderless group that has no organization at all and just say, yeah, you guys know what to do with it? Who knows what to do with it? This is how the radical left-wing money trail operates. It's designed to be opaque. It's designed to be confusing and disappear. But the connections are all there. Why haven't we done anything about it up until now? Okay, up next, who else but George Soros, Spooky Dudes, Open Society Foundation. They also fund the Alliance for Global Justice. They also are with the Antifa support groups. The charitable funding sources are legion for just that one. Then you have Fidelity Investments. Where do you have your money invested? Fidelity Investments Charitable Gift Fund. They donate to the National Lawyers Guild. Also, Schwab Charitable Fund. Boy, if I had my money in Schwab, or Fidelity, I don't know if I would have it. They're giving to the people who are supporting these people. I mean, I could go on, and we haven't even gotten to the crowdfunding platforms. You have Act Blue and Patreon. You have Fundraiser, the Action Network. Then you have book sales. Book sales? Oh yeah, book sales, like the college professor that produced the Antifa handbook. Look, I'm not accusing anyone here. I'm just saying this is pretty much off the top of my head. I'm just showing the connections that have a very strong odor attached to them. And I've followed these people long enough to know this is the way it works. This one chalkboard alone is enough for the Trump administration just to start. I mean, just start. And they are. And it should be enough alone just to debunk the ridiculous notion. Just the question, who are you writing checks to? $1 million check. Who's cashing it? What bank? Where is this happening? Schwab is giving to just street kids who, what? It's ridiculous to believe that. Ridiculous. Antifa now has been designated as a terrorist organization. It is about time, and it is time to turn over all of the stones. I am proud to say that after the first of the year, we're turning over not just the little stones, we're turning over the big boulders as well. We will show you in an epic special much, much more on this.
All right, folks, that was a little breakdown from Glenn Beck where he asked the obvious question. If they're paying millions of dollars, who are they paying it to if it's not a leader and doesn't exist? And again, it's just another one of these questions that the left just genuinely cannot answer. And with that, I'm very happy to welcome in studio my guest, Myron Gaines. He, of course, is a conservative, political, cultural, and true crime commentator, host of the world's number one men's podcast, the Fresh and Fit podcast. He's a former DHS special agent, a real estate investor, and he goes live on Rumble and YouTube Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. You can follow him on X at Myron Gaines X. How you doing, Myron?
Hey, man. I'm happy to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
Great having you here. And I was saying earlier in the show, I was watching you and Alex, and the whole time I was like, I wish I was in there. I almost just want to continue that conversation. But since we're on the topic of Antifa, what do you think about what the Trump administration is doing with Antifa?
I'm super happy. I've been saying this for 4 or 5 years now that Antifa, BLM, all these radical left organizations need to be terrorist organizations. Like it, you know, the violence got way too out of hand for them to finally, it took Charlie Kirk getting shot in the neck for them to finally take some type of, action. So I'm glad that we're finally doing that.
I mean, not to, you know, no pun intended, but like, was Charlie Kirk's murder not a real turning point? Like it feels like the last month, it's 1 month today since he was murdered. Yeah. The last month has been insane. It's
been crazy.
What do you think is behind that?
You know, you can talk about, you know, radical left violence, or some people will say it's Israel or whatever. I mean, there's just there's multiple problems, right?
Right.
Jews control this country. Right. We have, you know, these radical leftists that have been able to basically operate with impunity for a while. And like, I would say the way that you know this is because after he was shot, they took the TikTok to celebrate. Like,
right.
That should tell you everything you need to know. Like, conservatives can't even say there's two genders, right? Like on social media without like getting banned or whatever. People, like, if they have a job, they'll be like, oh, I don't want to say anything publicly because I'll lose my job. Like, but then you got these people dancing around and literally celebrating after somebody was like violently murdered in public. And that's because the liberals and the left in general never have to endure censorship. They've never had to deal with it. Never had to get any of this stuff. So when they showed their colors. They showed their colors. I'm glad they were able to identify some of these guys. Some of them ended up getting fired because of this, which is kind of funny. You know, I'm not for censorship myself, but I do think it's a problem when you're a nurse, a doctor, or, you know, someone who's in public trust and you're over here happy that someone got violently murdered. Like, well, what's wrong with you?
I totally agree. And it's not even really censorship, right? Because that was the thing people were saying was, oh, you know, conservatives were against cancel culture, but now they're for it. But like, okay, even, you know, go back to 2015, 2016. If there was a right winger who was like, you know, I'm glad that person died and he got fired, do you think any of us would be like, what? That's so wrong. It's like, dude, you made a TikTok celebrating an assassination. Like, duh, you're going to get fired.
And that's like, the difference between us and them. Like, if a left wing, I'm saying this with Alex, if a crazy left wing political commentator got assassinated, like, violently like that, I'd say we need to go find a person that shot him. Just because we have political differences doesn't mean anything. Like, I don't want violence to ever happen to anyone, even people that I oppose. But they don't see it that way. They want us dead.
Yeah.
They literally want us dead, these people. It's absolutely nuts.
Yeah, I definitely think that that's a big contributing factor. And I think, I mean, just the accusation of Israel killing Charlie Kirk. And again, I haven't really seen any evidence to that except for sort of the circumstantial evidence. Weirdly enough, like my tweet a month before is like kind of the best evidence we have still.
I even retweeted it.
It's crazy. And so it's not even necessarily that they like did it. It's like something about it just opened up the floodgates for people to go, I'm not going to hold my tongue anymore. And whether it's like Megyn Kelly and Tucker Carlson or Candace Owens or Matt Gaetz now is like going pretty hard against Israel. And it's like that taboo has finally just been lifted and people are just speaking honestly.
It's great to see, you know, it's because I think a big reason why is because they've controlled conservative media for so long.
Right.
Right. Like, you know, for so long, like if you even talked about Zionism or Jewish power, any of this stuff, they'd be immediately ban you, right? On the left and on the right. So I think for, you know, people on the right wing to finally say, yeah, like we're annoyed by this crap, it's like, that's a big deal, man. Cause they've controlled this side of the internet for a very long time.
And that's what was revealed, you know, that's what really is revealed with the stuff Candace Owens is releasing, these text messages and things. Yeah. It's like, this is how the sausage is made. This is how influence is peddled. This is how pressure is applied.
Well, the $2 million out, right? Like this is what they do, man. And they've done this for a while. I mean, you know, people thought like Nick was crazy when he said, oh yeah, when I was 18, they canceled me. Oh, bro, you don't know what you're talking about. No, it's true, dude. It's absolutely true. But like, I got demonetized for talking about this stuff. It's like they absolutely control both sides of the aisle. Like they absolutely do. And in the right wing, I would say in the conservative media, they have an even stronger stranglehold on it.
Isn't that so weird though? Like that's so backwards to me. And like now, you know, we're finally at this point where people are actually making videos where they're going, I denounce, you know, AIPAC. Like candidates for office are saying, I will never take a dollar from AIPAC. And they're getting huge cheers. Like that's insane, first of all. And then, but then the right wing is like, okay, now we'll be the Israel guy. We'll double down on the Israel support. And it's like, what are you people doing? Like, what is the right thinking?
If Democrats do get back in, they're going to get back in with the angle of, we don't like Israel. We are anti-imperial, whatever phrase they want to use. But like, look at what Mamdani's doing.
Yep.
I think if Mamdani is proving that if you are, you know, anti-Israel and you say something like, I'm going to stay in New York instead of going to Israel, like all these other guys, like that might be a viable road that the left will use to take power back. And I think that's what they're going to do, is they're going to lean really hard on the anti-Israel sentiment, in the Democrat Party, because 90% plus, are not supportive of Israel on the Democrat side. So I think that's going to be their next route to the White House.
I do too. And I think it's such a missed opportunity, especially now that, you know, Trump got this ceasefire deal. I mean, that should be a big, you know, feather in his cap. And if people, you know, want to see peace in that region, Trump is really your best bet, despite all of his, you know, dedication to the Zionist cause. But I think you're exactly right. Let's go to clip 22 here. I think this is a little compilation. I've got a couple versions of this, but basically Glenn Beck, was doing a TPUSA event. He sort of took Charlie Kirk's place and was up on stage taking questions from the audience.
Oh,
and he got some questions he maybe didn't have the best answer to. So let's go to clip 22 here. This is, Glenn Beck trying and failing to respond to the outrage from the younger people on the right who are sick of Israel. Let's watch.
Israel has an overwhelming lobby over the United States government, and we have unconditionally supported them. We have fought their wars in the Middle East. Bibi Netanyahu came to our Congress in the 90s, told us a list of countries that we need to take out, somewhere Syria, Iraq, Iran, Libya, etc. Through those wars, we have lost trillions of dollars. We have lost American servicemen.
We're lobbying everybody else. And they will.
First or Israel first?
No one's clapping.
Yeah. No one's clapping. First or Israel first? Easy question. Charlie was American first.
Charlie was starting to notice about the Israel lobby.
Could I answer my question? Could I answer the question, please?
You're talking about one thing they don't teach in school? They don't teach about the USS Liberty, where Israel literally came, blew up an American ship because they want us to get in their war with Egypt. And they don't teach that in school. I mean, I'm just saying.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your question.
I have a question. Why is there this societal taboo around criticisms of Israel? For example, AIPAC doesn't have to register as a foreign lobby, but like the Australia lobby does. And
that should be changed. That should be corrected. Look, I am not going to say Israel should have any special privileges. None.
So, I mean, this isn't going away.
Not.
So what did and look, if Republicans don't have good answers, they need to change their positions, man. And they really don't have good answers.
They don't. And it's because they've never had to deal with this before. They really have never had to deal with this before. And now it's like, now you're going to get these tough questions. And you can see Charlie was even like, oh man, this is good. I was at the Turning Point event in July before he passed away.
Oh wow.
And, lots of guys came up and asked him questions about Israel. And you could tell he's like pissed off. He's like, oh man, like again, like the USS Liberty. Oh my God. Again, 9/11. Oh my God. And he took a break to like walk off, like, and deal with it. But like, yeah, I mean, I disagree with Charlie when it comes to Israel, but you know, no one should ever be assassinated in that manner. Right. And I think everybody on the right kind of, you know, rallied around and got behind him like, yo, you're not going to kill one of ours. Right. And you know, obviously, no matter what anyone says, you know, Charlie Kirk is going to go down in history. I think he was one of the, you know, biggest political commentators on the right. We can see, and that's the difference between us and these guys, these idiots on the left as well. It's like, we can have disagreements with each other, but like, if something happens, like, we're not going to sit here and be like, oh yeah, we wish something bad. But like, on the left, they wish death upon each other all the time. Like, we don't do that over here. That's why we're better than these ass clowns.
Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out even what the left is like.
You can tell how stressed out he was. He was like, oh man, these guys are, oh God.
He's literally taking off his blazer. He's like, yeah, he's getting hot, you know, under the collar. And yeah, he's like, you know, but look, even him saying, well, you know, AIPAC should have to register under FARA. Like, that would be the end of AIPAC. Like, they wouldn't be able to operate the way they operate if that was the truth. So
that's
like,
not even like, people forget, like, it's not just AIPAC money. It's like, don't, like, private donors too. Like Meryl Mandelson gave like $100 million to Trump. Like, there's a whole, the problem is that like, they've subverted us so much where it's like, it's not just AIPAC. It's like people, private donors and everything. Like, Larry Elson just bought TikTok.
Yeah.
crazy.
And now what AIPAC is doing is they're laundering their money through other PACs. So like, they're going after Thomas Massey, but they're calling it the Kentucky MAGA PAC. It's just AIPAC.
Yeah.
There's another one we showed a video yesterday, 314. It's like, we're a science PAC, but it's all of their donors are all the AIPAC donors. So it's like, okay, this is just AIPAC by another name. So they see that like their brand is becoming toxic and they're trying to maintain their control while not making it obvious it's them. And of course with AIPAC, the money is important, but even more important than that, I think is the connections it gets you, the good media coverage it gets you. Like, you get a lot of benefits being with AIPAC.
Yahoo right now, I think Israel kind of like realized like, oh man, our press is kind of bad right now. And Netanyahu's been like doing like a full court press run, the past like 2 months. He did.
Yep.
Obviously, the botched interview with the Nelk boys, which was Al. He did Tatum. He did Trigonometry. He did a couple others. Like, he did PBD.
Yep.
So he obviously is understanding that they're losing the narrative. I think he understood it too late. But them picking up, TikTok, this is all in an effort to clean up the image of Israel. And they've already like gotten rid of, you can't even say AIPAC on TikTok now.
I know, but it's not going to work, right? You know, they censor the juice icon. And so people go, okay, well, now we're using the devil icon.
You can't
censor this.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. At a certain point, your efforts to censor are going to cause more outrage. Like, this is obvious. So
genie's out the bottle, man.
Yeah. So, obviously the thing they should be doing is introspective, you know, taking an introspective look and going, you know, gee, what are we doing that's wrong? But of course they can't do that, which is why they're always tell people, like Josh Hammer said, anti-Semitism is in your DNA. It's in Europeans' DNA.
Oh, yeah.
It's inborn. It's a kind of curse.
He debated
that we're all
Dave Smith at that event too. And
right.
He got a lot of heat because I was there. He got a lot of heat when Tucker was there. He got a lot of heat for having Dave Smith on there, a libertarian to debate, you know, a Zionist Jew. And they gave him a lot of heartache for that, man. So people are waking up and they can't stop it at this point, right? And because the other crazy thing too people need to understand is like, it's not just here on the right wing that is waking up. On the left, they're aware of this too, right? Yeah. Like all the big political commentators on the left-hand side are also denouncing Israel, right? Maybe for different reasons, more humanitarian reasons, genocide, which is, you know, obviously terrible as well. And here's the other thing too as well. Now that this, you know, conflict is pretty much finished for the most part, I still think Israel's going to do some BS, but I think now they're going to start to investigate what went down over the right. past 2 years. And they're going to see that this was a genocide in every single way. Every scholar's already come out and said it, but now it's going to be, they're going to like fully investigate it.
Right. Because we haven't even gotten reports out of Gaza in the last like 6 months. They killed all the journalists. And
yeah,
you're exactly right. Cause not only they've been withholding the investigation about October 7th as well. Yeah. So like it's going to come out that was a stand down order. It should at least, cause it obviously was.
They've already debunked the mass rapes. They've already debunked the beheaded babies, the babies in ovens and everything else like that. And to this day, Netanyahu still talks about babies in ovens. And I'm like, dude, this has been debunked. Like, holy crap, man, but they're still running with the Hasbara, right? Even when I was debating Brandon Tatum, he mentioned, I was like, dude, that's not true. It's been debunked. So I predict over the next, now that the conflict is mostly done, in the next 1 to 2 years, you're going to see a lot of ugly things come out. And then the death toll is going to keep going up because
right.
keep in mind, they got like, I think 60,000 is what they named. But that doesn't account for people in rubble, people that died from the lack of food. Now the aid's coming back in when they were saying the whole time that they weren't starving them, but they were. So yeah, dude, yep. we'll see. It's going to be nuts.
Yeah, it has definitely changed. So, like, on that topic, what is your take on the ceasefire deal? Do you think this, cause, you know, I feel like we all have like PTSD now where it's like, this can't be true. Yeah. It has to be a trick, right? Like, I don't want to win the Fell For It Again award. Yeah. So like, you know, yeah, well, I got to look at all the angles to see like how we could possibly be screwed here. But this seems good. It seems like the only people that are against this are Netanyahu and his buddies in the Israeli cabinet. Seems like the Gazans are celebrating. Even, you know,
Israelis are happy.
Even Iran is in on it. So it's like, I really can't see how this could be a bad thing, except that it's kind of this weird neo-colonial thing where you've got, you know, it could be kind of a setup to have a 15-minute city zone where it's an international community. I don't know. It's a little bit weird how it's, but it seems like the best possible outcome to me.
It is, you know, the best situation right now. But I will say that I just don't trust the Israelis. Me and you both don't trust the Israelis, right? Like, I think that they're going to do some BS. I mean, I remember when they had talked about like, oh yeah, it's over. Like they bombed Gaza again. So we'll see what happens. And the thing people need to understand also is like Netanyahu is like the moderate one in the government for the Likud party, right? Which is their equivalent to like the Republican party, their right wing party. But all the other guys that are there that are like supporting him, Smoltrich and Ben-Gavir, these guys are all nuts.
They're crazy.
They're absolutely crazy. And just so people understand like the political climate in Israel, like even his adversary on the left, they even say, we need to annex the West Bank and we need to, there's no Palestinian, we're not going to give the Palestinians a state. So even the liberals on their side don't, believe in this. And the thing is with these Israelis is a lot of them are genocidal, deranged lunatics who don't look at the Palestinians as people. And this is what happens when you end up with people that in their religion, they're the chosen people, man. It's nuts.
Yeah, it is weird, man. It's like the whole world is being held hostage by this little death cult, out of Israel. But of course there's members here, the Lindsey Grahams, they're obviously, you know, very committed to this as well.
Retarded evangelical Christians, man.
Yeah. Nuts. They're dedicated and it is cultish and weird and bizarre. And, you know, but I look at it and I go, man, Israel didn't achieve anything it wanted to. I don't think it's getting anything it expected to get out of this 2 year. I mean, it killed a bunch of Gazans. Great, you know, great job. Yeah, bunch of kids are dead.
I think they got the wars they wanted, man. I think like for them, I think they got like a monumental W in their end, right? Unfortunately, like, cause I'll kind of go through it real quick. So like first, obviously you had the war in Gaza. They were able to go into the Gaza Strip and, you know, relentlessly bomb them and kill them. They were able to take out Yahya Sinwar, Ismail Haniyeh, the two heads of Hamas. They assassinated Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran, Iran. They were able to wage a war against Hezbollah. They ran the pager operation. They killed Nassan Hasrallah, who was the head of Hezbollah. And then they used all that to prop themselves. They got Bashar al-Assad out of there.
I think that's probably the biggest one.
That's a huge W for them, right? And some idiot, I was debating some idiot on Twitter, was like, yo, those are the Turks. I was like, dude, are you fucking stupid? Like, 100% Israel is involved in that because after they ran the pager attack, right? So I remember this like clockwork. In September of 2024, they run the pager attack. As they're running the pager attack, they also are doing airstrikes, right?
Yep.
And they killed Hassan Nasrallah, head of Hezbollah, after the pager attack. Then they did a ground assault into southern Lebanon, right? To take out the missiles that were coming into Haifa and everything else like that. Cause they had to evacuate like 60,000 Israelis. And after that was done, there was a ceasefire brokered between the IDF and Hezbollah. And the reason for this, and no one reported this, they're actually getting their asses kicked on the ground. The IDF is not good on the ground. Like, Hezbollah is like, they lost in 2006 against Hezbollah. They're not that great on the ground. Israelis never do a ceasefire if they're winning. So, they ended up doing the ceasefire. And then immediately, like a day after, dude, the rebels from HTS and Ahmed al-Shara, aka Jalani, they, you know, go into Aleppo in Syria, take that over, and then work their way down the M5 highway and took over Damascus in like 3 weeks.
Well, did you hear about the app? Have you heard about the app when it came to Syria? Nobody knows about it. It's the craziest story. So the main reason they were able to move through Syria that quickly is because there was an app that was spread through the Syrian army where they said, download this app and we'll send you $50. I think it may have been $50 a month. And so basically everybody in the Syrian army downloaded this app because it had the endorsement of the wife of Bashar al-Assad. And they hacked it and were able to intercept all the communications and were sending fake communications. So they basically took over the communications of the entire Syrian army.
Wow.
With this free app they were already
pissed off because they weren't getting paid. So that's right. Another thing too, because like why the rebels were able to kind of come in, the Syrian army just stopped fighting because they weren't getting paid. The government was, because Syria had suffered hard sanctions, man. So they were broke, and Bashar al-Assad had to run out of there. And after he ran out of there and Syria fell, Jalani came in and took the power, and then basically the axe of resistance was cooked, and that opened up the door for them to attack Iran.
Yep, 100%. Yeah, no, I agree with that, and definitely
I think that's how they won. Like, for how the Israelis won, they were able to basically destabilize all their enemies, and the only thing left now is Iran.
That's true, but it's like, you know, obviously they wanted Gaza. Obviously they wanted
But it came at a great cost. Cost, though, because you're right in that, and because you're saying, hey, what did they win? Yeah, they beat some of their adversaries in the Middle East, but they lost a lot of public sentiment, especially the United States. So that's a big L.
And I don't know how they're going to recover that. especially with the way they keep acting, it's just insane. And, you know, you and Alex were talking about it quite a bit, just like, and I totally get Alex. He says he's allergic to it. And I totally understand that, especially I'm doing this for 30 years, I feel like it's different now. And I feel like we just got to treat Israel like any other country. And when you just treat it like that, it's not actually that hard. It's not actually that difficult. And it's just the overwhelming attention to Israel that our government pays to Israel, that like, that's why we're talking about it all the time, because our leadership's talking about it all the time.
And it's been censored for so long. Like, you take this subject has been banned on, I remember vividly before October 7th, if you even talked about Jewish power or Zionism or Israel, on YouTube, you'd get banned immediately. Like, most Americans didn't even know what Zionism was until after October 7th. So October 7th was like, you know, everyone rallied behind Israel, and then they took the husband, then they, you know, went with the ridiculous lies of the beheaded babies and the mass rapes and everything else like that. And that's a big reason why Hamas, like, a lot of people don't know this. On October 10th, Hamas put a deal in place, to give all the hostages back to Israel.
Right.
And Israel said no. And the reason why is because they started to see that they were running with the mass rapes and the beheaded babies lie, whatever. And they knew, oh my God, these guys are going to level Gaza. They're going to destroy this place. That's why they said, let's go ahead and do a deal. And then,
the point anyway? I mean, they got the hostages in order to do a hostage exchange. So that always made sense to me. All right. We'll be right back. More with Myron Gaines on the other side. Third hour straight ahead. Don't go anywhere.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well. And
RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures without it, and I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it, I started taking it, and boy, let me tell you something, what a blessing.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
Let me tell you something, I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue, and I gotta tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
It is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there. My kids take it. My wife takes it.
Everybody takes it.
I used to have to pay, what, $10,000 a week?
Right.
To get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take two pills or drink it once a day.
Right.
And pay what? I don't know. $30, $40 a bottle of it.
Depends on what the sale is, yeah.
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Yeah!
Myron Gaines is my guest in studio. Follow him on X at Myron Gaines X. And of course, he does this incredible podcast, the Fresh and Fit podcast, which is still going incredibly well. Sometimes you see clips from a show a whole bunch and then it kind of fades out. But man, Fresh and Fit just maintains, man. You constantly have a presence.
Cause women are stupid. So it's like, we just
infinite content glitch.
We just keep showing how stupid they are. You know what I mean? It's like, oh man.
It's different flavors of stupid. You got some that are stupid this way.
Yeah,
some...
you got like the stupid black women, then you got the stupid white women, then you got the stupid Hispanics and
all
the stupid
flavors.
Asians every now and then. It's like, they're all retarded.
Well, they're not all retarded. Ladies, calm down. He doesn't. He
oh, there's
doesn't,
probably some
know,
listening right now, right?
There are probably at least a few listening right now.
Make a sandwich.
It feels like that's kind of fallen to the wayside. I feel like 6 months ago, 9 months ago, at the beginning of the year, it was like the gender thing was constant. It was there was constantly like, I don't know, for a while, it seemed like it was almost like scheduled to where like once a month there would be some Twitter drama about an e-girl. And it was like, okay, the first of every month, some e-girl posts a dumb picture or somebody poses for a calendar. And it's like, oh, all right, now we have the next month of absurdity to get through. But I feel like that's maybe kind of fallen to the wayside. Do you think that's because, maybe the people pushing that are occupied?
Yeah. And then also like these liberals keep trying to kill us. So it's like, we can't tell women they're stupid anymore. It's like, we got to like focus on not getting shot. It's like, it's getting crazy out here, man. And then the blacks are going absolutely nuts too, like stabbing people on trains and stuff like that. It's like the black fatigue. Dude, I'm fucking tired of y'all, man. Like, goddamn.
Well, that's
they hate
really,
me even more.
I mean, so what about that? We were actually talking about it, earlier when you first got here, and I played the clip yesterday. People haven't seen it. You got Steven Crowder, like, arguing with this, yeah, entire black barbershop going, no, white people deserve, you know, respect too.
Yeah.
And it's like, who would have ever expected? I mean, you know, God bless
Steven
Crowder.
I'm glad he said black fatigue. I'm glad he said that.
Right? So like this, it's another thing that like nobody used to say that. Nobody used to express that, but people are expressing it now. And again, it doesn't come from a place of hate. It's like, enough is enough. We're sick of our country being controlled by foreigners, and we're sick of white people being blamed and discriminated against constantly when we haven't done anything wrong. So like, again, what is this turning point we're going through? Like, how do we shape this to be a positive?
I think, you know, between X, like, becoming more free speech, right? Like, mm-hmm. Where we can finally start, like, I think it really started, like, once we were able to, like, call out the H-1B visa.
Right.
Like, damn, like, we're tired of these Indians coming in, these Jeets, they stink, like, bro, like, what the, I don't know about you, but, like, every time I call, like, American Express, or like, one of these credit card companies, and it's like, the customer service is like, Indian dude gets on the phone, oh, damn it, man.
Yeah.
But then you remember, it could be worse, it could be a black woman, and she's gonna give you an attitude. So I'm just like,
at least she's American.
Yeah, at least she's an American, but it's like, what, you need help today? I'm like, oh my God, I get me fucking Pajit. But like, so it started with the H-1B stuff, right? So people started talking more openly about that. And then obviously we got the Israel stuff and everything. And then like, now people are like, this is like a serious thing that like, black crime, it's been a problem for a very long time. Right? They don't take accountability. They get shot up by the fucking cops. Oh, bro, blah, systemic racism. And then like people start putting the body cams on. And then I advise any of you guys watch like Police Activity. You're going to see how crazy these monkeys really are. Cause it's absolutely nuts how they act sometimes. It's like you're running at them with a knife. What did you expect? And then you get shot. And they're like, oh, my baby was such a good boy. Was he really though? Was he really?
Dude, and it's like there's more stories every day. There's another one today. A dude with like 39 felony counts goes out and murders some like 29-year-old guy. And it's like,
it's crazy.
It's it's another one of these things where it's like, I didn't even realize this was a problem we had to solve, because how did it even get to this point? How did it get to the point that you can have 39 convictions and you're still out? Like,
it's because we have this BS where it's like, oh, well, we got systemic racism. Since we got systemic racism, which is a scam, by the way, we need to go ahead and, like, you know, let some of these guys out because, you know, our criminal justice system is racist or whatever. Like, bro, get out of here, man. Like, it's just so annoying. Like, we need to bring racism back. How about, I'm just going to say, we need to bring it back, all right? Because the reality is that we stopped being racist, and then, like, now these guys are going out fucking nuts, stabbing people on trains and stuff. Like, if that girl, that beautiful girl, Irina, if she was racist, she'd be alive today. It's because she was a BLM supporter, right? And she came wanting the American dream, and she thought in her country, like, well, we don't got crazy blacks over here in Ukraine. Let me sit next to this deranged fuck. And then he pulled out a knife and stabbed her.
They're not used to it. Yeah, if people go to public school, they would understand
it.
How to act.
They would
yeah.
see it.
All right, we'll be right back, folks.
Why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
Oh,
because you showed
that,
up.
Is that the way to
you
talk?
You showed up. You voted.
You can extend it right now.
A permanent extension of massive tax breaks. Is that right?
90% of Americans take the standard deduction.
Is that
right? If you had your way, the standard deduction would have been cut in half. That would have been a massive tax increase on Americans.
Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic Party, and the rest of the deep state want you and I to shut up. We're not going to shut up. That's why on top of the giant sale we've got going, Veterans of the InfoWar right now, you get an additional 10% off at checkout at thealexshowstore.com with promo code Hakeem. Because no, Hakeem, we're not going to shut up. And when Americans and others back InfoWars and this operation and what we're doing, they are literally defending the tip of the spear. This is the media operation the globalists and the left hate the most. We can't do this without your support. So please help keep us on the air and really say no to Hakeem Jeffries and the rest of these people by going to thealexshowstore.com for the best supplements, widest selection of Patriot apparel, and gear. Promo code Hakeem to get 10% off right now.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
All right, folks, welcome back. This is The War Room. Final hour has begun. I'm with Myron Gaines. Follow him on X at Myron Gaines X. And how can they follow Fresh and Fit?
We're on, Fresh and Fit on YouTube, Rumble, right, on everything. So Myron Gaines X is like, I'm on Kick everywhere, and then Fresh and Fit as well, everywhere.
Yeah, and then there's a bunch of other, because I see like the Clips channel and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah, we got a bunch of stuff. Yeah, so I do my show, The Debrief, which is like political stuff where I talk about how blacks are stupid, Jews can have too much power, women are stupid. I talk about that. And we do Fresh or Fit right after.
Okay, I was going to say, blacks and Jews on the political, and then Fresh and Fit as women.
And I also say how women are stupid, but I do it without them there. Then I go, like, it's hilarious, because I'll, like, do a show, right, The Debrief, and I'll, like, cover, like, all this stuff, how women are dumb and whatever, and they're like, okay, guys, come on over to Fresh Fit so you guys can see how dumb they are. And then I literally just get up and go to the other studio. You need to come, dude. You need to come and hang out.
I'd love to.
And then I just come, and then I sit down, and we just start the show, and then people can see what I'm talking about.
Well, I mean, I'm a woman respecter, but some of the ladies you find, though, my God.
Oh, bro, it's terrible.
It's not good.
We're cooked in society. Like, there's just 304s everywhere.
Dude, there it is. I mean, their brains have been broken in a lot of ways.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That's the thing. I feel sorry for a lot of
feminism.
Them. You know, it's like, you ever see that video of the beaver that they have inside a house, and it's piling, like, stuffed toys to make a dam in the doorway?
Yeah.
And it's like, it doesn't know what it's doing. It's trying to fulfill its biological function. And so it thinks it needs to build a dam, but it's just blocking a doorway. And it's like, you've taken it out of its natural habitat. I feel like a lot of women, their natural impulses are just, they like don't know where to put them exactly. And they're in this weird, unnatural environment they're not supposed to be in. So they're just, I feel bad
for
a lot of
women. They should be making sandwiches, but they're trying to like go to school and like have jobs and be like equal citizens and stuff. It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make for a happy life. I know that's absolutely true.
Women don't want equality.
Yeah, this one. Yeah, this video.
It's like, what am I doing here?
Yeah, it just it feels good. It feels good. The dopamine's firing in its brain because it's doing what it's supposed to. And yeah, I always look to that, when you see like, women who are childless, who dedicate their lives to like getting, criminals out of prison. And it's like, no, you think you're doing a compassionate thing because that's what you're hardwired
to do.
Like the
judge that let that weirdo out, the one that stabbed Irina, it was like a female judge.
Who wasn't even a lawyer, let alone a judge. Bro. Again, that's the thing that I think we're all like coming to terms with. And I'm sort of constantly reminded of it over and over is like, our system is so messed up. Like the more you look at it, the more you're just like, what do we even do about any of this? Like, what do you do when you've got people appointed who were never lawyers, never went to law school, but they're judges and they're letting out people who have been convicted of crimes 30 times and they go out and kill a woman. I mean, it's just like, okay, do we need to just like knock over the game set and try again? Like how do we achieve that? Like everything is so far gone. It's so complicated. And then the backstop is supposed to be the people. It's supposed to be that we're supposed to be an informed, intelligent populace that will hold our leaders to account. But now you've got, you know, now you're likely to get more votes if you go up and say, I want to kill my opponent or I'm going to, you know, Letitia James, I'm going to throw Trump in jail, even though he hasn't committed a crime. People vote for
real estate.
So
it's like, I commit the same crimes. It's kind of funny how like she said, I'm going to put him in jail for real estate crimes. Meanwhile, she's like committing real estate crimes. It's like
the chutzpah, man.
Yeah, dude, it's just absolutely nuts. Same thing with, what's the Jew's name? Skiff?
Adam Schiff.
Adam Schiff. And then they're talking about John Bolton's going to get indicted next week.
Oh, that's right. Actually, the crew just brought that in. Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah, I got you, baby.
Breaking news from the crew here. Criminal charges against Bolton expected as early as next week. The acting U.S. attorney in Maryland is moving forward quickly to seek criminal charges against President Trump's former national security advisor, John Bolton. According to two people familiar with the case, a complaint or indictment could come as early as next week, said the sources who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss sensitive matters without authorization. I imagine this probably has to do with leaking as well. It's probably similar to what was happening with James Comey.
With him, I think it was he was like processing classified stuff on like personal emails, I think is what it is. It's going to be mishandling of classified stuff.
Well, and interestingly, both Comey and Bolton are technically Republicans, right?
Yep.
So I wonder if that's why they're being charged first.
I think, well, to Bolton avoid has really been, you know, they haven't liked him in forever. I know Trump and Bolton definitely dislike each other. You're fired, Bolton. But Bolton is like, you know, a PNAC, you know, hardcore neocon, one of the guys that got us into the Iraq war.
Yep.
You know, he was one of the only guys actually from PNAC that wasn't a Jew. But yeah, hardcore neocon, man. Guy got us literally involved with all the wars in the Middle East.
Yep.
Big proponent on being a war hawk.
So, you know, it's like, I'm glad there are indictments coming. It feels like too little, too late. It feels like Trump is still surrounded by bad guys. He's still absolutely like enveloped in the deep state where, you know, for 9 months, apparently the people he tasked with charging, James Comey just don't charge him. And then in the last 5 days, Trump puts in his own personal attorney to get it done. And it like, she barely gets it in under the wire and they get one indictment about lying to it's like,
We're not doing enough.
It's not enough. It's not fast enough.
I'm not even mad because like at first I was like, you know what, man, it's probably a bad idea to like indict and go after your political rivals. But you know what, dude? Honestly, at this point, like the thing is this. It's one thing for you guys to go after him politically, but you guys were committing crimes as you guys were going after him.
That's
so it's like, how are you going to like sit here and like, you know, like we're talking about Alex, like punch the guy. And then expect them to not punch you when he gets back in. And you guys were committing crimes as you were doing it. And it's easy. It's like with Letitia, for example, real estate fraud, easy. Like this isn't your house and you got like a loan as at your primary residence. Like you're cooked. What are you doing?
And it just, that type of stuff just goes to like, that's who these people are. If they can get an edge, they'll take it. If they can screw somebody over, or cheat a little bit, it's just, that's their mindset. It's just like, you know, this dog eat dog kind of world where they're just trying to screw everybody else over or else they think they're being screwed over. And it's just like this sickness that's just like poisoning our entire country. But, and we're talking about this, you know, when you first got here, if the Democrats get back in power, there's every indication that they will. I mean, we don't forget.
We're cooked, bro.
Dude, forget,
all of us are going to jail. All of us.
If we're lucky. I mean, and like, I thought this was put well by, Peter Nimitz on X. It will be trivial for Democrats to designate white supremacy as a terrorist organization and throw a few thousand Republicans, few if any of whom would actually be white supremacists or even criminals, into CECOT in 2029.
They're going to put me in there too.
Right?
I'm going to
I mean, that's the thing.
Guys,
it's like, okay, Trump is doing enough to like give them the precedent to like really crack down if they want. So
they're fighting us now and they're not in power.
This is one thing
I will give Democrats and liberals in general, like a lot of credit for, they will protest. They will show up. They will do what needs to be done. They'll put money into it, et cetera. Like conservatives, like we don't really like protest like that. Like January 6th, like was rare.
Right.
Right. Let's be honest. Like very
rare.
And
we learned our lesson real quick.
They learned their lesson with that one, right? Like, cause since conservatives don't riot or go crazy like that, why do you think they went so hard on January 6th? Cause they don't do it.
Right.
So with the Democrats and stuff like that, they don't even have power right now. And they're rioting in LA. In Portland, they're going nuts on ICE and everything. So if they ever get power back, we're all cooked, man.
Seriously. And again, it's like we saw how they were last time. I mean, I have friends that should be in jail right now for the next 20 years. Thank God we got Trump in office to pardon them. But like they already threw innocent people in prison for 20 years when, you know, over January 6th when they weren't even in Washington, D.C. at the time, like Enrique Tarrio. I mean, it's like they already did that and we hadn't even done anything to them. Now Trump is like pissing them off. You know, obviously I agree with everything Trump's doing.
Yeah, he's agitating them to a degree where they're going to get back in power. At this point, I was saying this, I think I said this to you earlier. Like we just got to vote Republican for the rest of our life, no matter what, just for reasons of like not going to jail.
And it's like, how do we get it across to the Republicans? Like this, you're going to jail too, dude. Like Lindsey Graham, Marco Rubio, like any of these people, they're going to drag your family out of their beds
at night.
Cabinet
is going to, dude, like Marco Rubio, I can already see the charges right now. They're going to hit Marco Rubio with like, for what he did with the State Department with the anti-Semitism stuff. They're going to hit him with some kind of charge there. They're going to hit Trump obviously with war crimes or something like that. Pam Bondi's gonna go to jail. You know, JD Vance are gonna try to put him in. Dude, his entire cabinet, if they get power, is going to jail.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, we've crossed the Rubicon, right? The classic story, you know, the whole
thing. And they started this war. These liberals, like, when they indicted Trump in New York City, and that just the domino started falling, I was like, yep, here we go. And they started it, so.
Yeah. And that's the thing with Trump is it's like, nobody understands this better than Trump. So, you know, I feel like part of me is going, hey, Trump, you gotta, you know, really focus here. But it's like the man was shot in the face and he still doesn't seem to get it. So it's like, what can I tell him that he hasn't learned by himself? So like, what do you think is behind it? I mean, a lot of the white pill people, the QAnon people are just like, you know, it's fine. You know, everything's happening behind the scenes, but like, no, we need to see public stuff. We need to see handcuffs. We need to see people thrown in prison. I mean, we went through the list the other day of like the 45 people from the Trump, era that were thrown in jail by Joe Biden. I mean, it's Roger Stone, Steve Bannon, Peter Navarro, Rudy Giuliani, Jenna Ellis. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on and on. Yeah. So it's like,
just the Georgia case alone, like, had like 20 of them indicted, man.
Right?
That Georgia RICO, which was a huge overreach, by the way. She had to dismiss the charges. Like, she couldn't even get Young Thug charged. Fannie Willis was doing that straight for clout.
It was total BS. And it was all, of course, just to cover up because they actually did steal the 2020 election. So it's like, how do we get them to move on some of this stuff with the urgency that it requires? Or do we just need to be making contingency plans here?
Man. Because the problem is that this is like so, like dude, like YouTube, for example, like they banned a bunch of people for political commentary. Like they just let Sneeko back on, right? I'm glad that he's back on. Like they took Alex out, Nick out for political stuff, bro. And it's like, what, and why? Because the Biden administration was involved in censoring people as well. So it's just, it is a real problem in so many different levels, like deep. This is why the Zuckerberg and all these guys like started cozying up to Trump, because they know they were involved in this bullshit.
Right.
Or the BS, sorry.
No, you're exactly right. And it's like that type of stuff too is like, okay, so often now we'll see these headlines. It's like, yes, we discovered this person was doing this thing. So he's had his security clearance removed. And it's like, what? You know, he committed treason. And he's just not in charge anymore. Or the ADL. It's like, well, the ADL is actually a hate group, so they're not going to be allowed to train the FBI anymore. And it's like, that's not a punishment.
Yeah.
That is nothing. That's just, now they're the same as me.
Like all these guys, like Zuckerberg, cause people forget like a couple days after January 6th, like January 10th, dude, Trump was banned off everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything. I don't even think you could get an Uber.
Yeah, like, no, seriously. Well, and of course, you know, the video that he posted telling everybody to go home and be peaceful, they remove and then say he was calling for violence.
Delete the tweet as well where he said it, like there, you know, and it's funny because like in DC when he got charged, they charged him, with January 6th stuff, when he got charged federally under Jack Smith.
Yeah, yeah.
So, absolutely nuts, man. And then Georgia was the whole RICO, and then Florida, well, the Florida case, I will tell you this, that was the one that worried me because like when it comes to like documents, there's not really much you could do to fight that. Like they're going to say, oh yeah, it's national defense information.
Right.
And when it's national defense information, classification doesn't matter.
Yeah. You know, things could have gone a lot worse, but
yeah.
Again, I'm just baffled at the lackadaisical nature of the Trump administration.
He's gonna have to give himself a pardon and everybody else on his way out. There's no way they're absolutely gonna come after. If a Democrat gets in, they're absolutely gonna come after everybody, dude, in this administration, everybody.
And as far as I can tell, a Democrat's gonna get in because, especially with the Israel case, like I think Trump is.
I think that's the only way they could get in.
What?
They'll have to like really lean into like the Mamdani strategy of like we're anti-Israel, whatever. I will say that they lost the young men, which is good.
The left-in.
Yeah. Kamala Harris actually spoke about it in her book.
Yeah.
How me and Andrew Tate.
She credited you.
Yeah, she heard us. She said we heard her election, which, you know, all of you guys owe me one. So, you know, oh man, bat on the back. But,
seriously.
But yeah, no, all jokes aside though. If they get back in, we're cooked. But I think the only way they're going to get back in is really leaning into the Israel thing, mm-hmm. saying like, yeah, we're against it. But now the conflict is done. So who knows by 2028, who's going to, you know, who'd it be? Newsom probably, right?
I don't know. AOC, it doesn't look good. No matter who it is, it's not going to be, you know, somebody that we want. And, you know, already it's just, I think Trump is at his lowest approval rating of all time at this point. I think most of that has to do with Israel. So it's like,
yeah.
You know, forget, you know, Trump's term. We have midterms coming up next year.
Yeah.
They're going to start impeachments. It's going to be bad, man. So that's what it's like, dude, Trump.
That's why he rushed to get the big, beautiful bill through not too long ago. And I think that's what this government shutdown is about. They're still butthurt about that.
Well, I don't know if that's going well at all. Oh, here's the picture I was talking about earlier. Maybe we get back into this topic. 29-year-old killed in Charlotte. Suspect is Sanchez Nicholson. I didn't know Sanchez was a first name. That's weird. 33 prior arrests, including multiple attempted murders. And she's like, look at this, dude. That's like, I mean, I don't know how old this guy is, but that's like multiple times a year being caught and convicted. Can you imagine? Like every couple of months. You're caught for something else and they just let you out again. It's like, what do we need to do about this?
Well,
I know the answer.
If I was a fear, I would have, what I call the, WBNN or Waterboarding Niggas Network.
Okay.
Where we would torture these guys on live stream for everybody to watch. Stay sponsored, of course. We would pay for it. Totally be free for you, the viewer. No pay per view. And, we would just torture these guys all day, waterboarding them, you know, bamboo reeds and nails. All that stuff. If you harm a child or you stab somebody like they did with Irina or any of this other stuff, you're going to go ahead and get, you're going to get messed up.
But what do you think about this idea? I think we should bring back public flogging.
Yeah.
You like that?
Yeah. Because here's the thing with these criminals, like they kind of have egos. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
They don't want everyone in the world to see them get beat up. I'm slapped up.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, I got to waterboard them and, you know, do this type of, you know.
Plus, like, you know, people, it sounds cruel when you say it, but like, think about it. Would you rather spend 3 years in a concrete box or would you rather get smacked with a whip a couple times? Like, I would choose the whip.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think people would choose
embarrassing and shit. Then put them in stocks.
Put them in stocks. Again. You know, strip them naked. Maybe they have like a shawl or something in the front, but like.
And it's got to be done publicly.
It has to be public. It has to be live stream. It has to be the oldest, whitest dude you can find with a good whip hand.
Yeah.
Smacking them, humiliate them. I think that would drop the crime rate like 20 points in a day.
Absolutely, because no one's gonna want to get like whipped or put in stocks or waterboarded and you know look like a softie in front of everybody. You know what
seriously,
I mean?
Because you know going to jail, it's kind of like a you know point of pride.
It's like cool for them. Like, oh, you're gonna do my time. Okay, we'll see how you're gonna do your time when we waterboard you. Okay, like we'll see how you like that. Okay,
I'm saying the psychological thing of the whip, and you get an old guy. I mean, you dress him up like a Confederate soldier while he does it. It would be entertaining. It would cost less money. I mean, we're paying to house these people their whole lives. Like, just hit them with a whip a couple times and send them back home.
So if it's a black dude, waterboard. Waterboarding Nigga Network or Waterboarding News Network, right? If it's a white person or a Jew, hey, nobody's safe, by the way. This is, just so you guys know, this isn't, it's gonna be for all races. We just know it's gonna be blacks most of the time. But, you know, if you're a Jew, you do any of this other stuff, bro, we gonna get you too, man. You're gonna get whipped or waterboarded or whatever. Well, could you imagine if, like, you whipping a Jew? That'd be funny. And they're the ones that like started the slave trade. That'd be nuts.
You'd have to have a different race.
Have a black dude to whip him?
Exactly.
Whip Mordecai? How crazy would that be? That'd be nuts.
Look, we're trying to come up
interview.
With, is this called creative thinking, brainstorming?
This
we're trying to come
you
up
take
with something.
The country back, baby. This is how we do it.
Yes. The point is it's not working. What we're doing now is not working. People are being stabbed. They're being killed. They're being let out of prison over
Absolutely.
And over. There's got to be a better way. There just has to be a better way.
We got to shame the 304s too.
Well, that's a whole different can of worms, because what do we do about it? And actually, you know, that kind of ties into what you and Alex were talking about China, because, you know, obviously China is the big threat to us if there is one on Earth, if it's going to be China.
For sure.
But, you know, I was talking to a guy who does business in China and, like, works with the Chinese government, because everybody does there. And he's like, he was saying, he was talking to a Chinese guy, and the Chinese guy's like, we're not going to go to war with America. Why would we? We'll just wait.
Yeah.
We'll just wait. We're already destroying ourselves. They know they don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, and I believe that. I think China, like, why would they want to get in a fight with America when they just have to wait?
We got divisive politics. We got dumb women. We got blacks committing crimes all over the place. We got Jews, you know, and the black, you know, running things in the back end. So it's like, bro,
and that's how, and hey, that's how the Chinese think about it. I mean, the Chinese are not bound by political
correctness. Oh, they're super based on the Jews too. They're like, yeah, the Jews run America. They know it.
They say it. Seriously. And this actually, I forgot I had this, story from today. Citing white birth rates, Chinese ambassador claims Western leaders are pursuing a, quote, genocide policy. So, I mean, they're literally, you know, it's like, you go like, oh, we're going to go to war with China. China's like, why would we? You're killing yourselves. Yeah. We're just going to sit back here
just
and make money.
Keep importing Jeets. Like, you guys are done. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a reason why we don't let them in here. You guys want to take them? All right, have fun with the Jeets. Like, they're just going to multiply and we're going to turn into Canada. Have you seen Toronto?
Yeah, no, thank God. But yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's crazy.
And they send me angry messages. Hey, look, Jeets, I'm not terrified of you guys, all right? You guys stink. Stand on what I say. You guys really do stink, all right? Put on some deodorant.
I mean, you know, it's a cliche, but it's like it's a cliche for a reason. I'm sure
your food is terrible, too. Like, who eats curry? Curry is disgusting. Like,
oh, a little Lamb Rogan Josh? I don't know. I can't vibe with you on that.
Everything about India sucks. Their food sucks. Their women are ugly. Like, you guys are a failed country altogether.
Well, you know, there's that. Have you ever seen people play the game where you go on Google Maps and you try to find a place in India that doesn't have trash? Have you seen that? And they can't do it.
You can't do it.
You can't win.
It's
anywhere there's a paved road, there are mountains of trash in India. So it's like, and it's, you know, so it's like, oh, you know, Jeets stink or whatever. It's like, no, literally they like, there's videos now. I had a video just yesterday where it's like a big, you know, Indian celebration in Canada. And afterwards they're just throwing all the trash into the river. And it's,
bro,
like,
it's like,
this can't, is not going to last.
And then they get mad at me for guys, they get mad at guys like me. Like they're sending me death threats on Instagram and stuff like that. And DM's like, oh, bro, don't talk about the Sikhs, whatever. You guys all stink. I don't care. I don't. What is this?
Look at
what,
that.
What
just
is this?
Piles of trash.
Everywhere.
Mountains of trash.
Bruh.
And that looks like a nice part of town.
This is like the cow just chilling. Bro.
That's
what?
Not that bad. No, it's literally a thing you cannot find. And I'm sure, you know, I've seen a documentary called Wild India. There's animals, whatever. But like, if there's a paved road, yeah. It's,
the Jeets are the Jewish biological weapon. They keep importing them. And then the blacks are committing all these crimes. It's just, we're cooked, man. We're cooked, bro.
Well, okay, so what are we gonna do?
I don't know, like, yes, let's go, baby. Oh
my God, I don't even want to know the prompt you put in for that.
Because that worked, bro. I'm telling you, it's gonna make so much money. We will be fucking making money, we will be making money hand over fist with the WNBN, WBNN, man. I'm telling you, bro.
You might have something there. And there's this. As a white man, I understand this very deeply. From Alfred Albion on X, whites are less than 10% of the world's population. I think it's probably less than like 7% now. Yet, in most white countries, special status of minority is given to non-white residents. A Chinaman in Wales is a minority, yet there are 1.3 billion Chinese and 3 million Welsh. This is the mindset that we need to break out of, where it's white people in white countries going, we have to give it up for these poor minorities.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, there's a billion Chinese in a country that's exclusively theirs.
It's bad when guys like me are like running around like, yeah, you know what? It's probably a problem if we're not if we don't stay in a white majority country. Then I get like the dumb niggers. Oh, well, yeah, these guys are cool. Hey, do you want to live around a bunch of black people? Last time I checked, when you niggas get money, you don't live around blacks either. So shut up.
Well,
shut up.
But you know, that's the
crazy.
Nobody
wants to live around blacks.
But like, also, why?
Around blacks, you can't relax.
You ask Arena about that. No, but I mean, why? Do I have to be white to not want white people to be destroyed? I don't want Mexican people destroyed. I don't want black or Arabs destroyed. What is it about white people that it's like,
here's
it's only
part.
Us
they'll
that
tell
care
you,
about ourselves?
They'll tell you you're a white nationalist for saying that, or you're a white supremacist, right? But I've been saying it too, like, bro, it's kind of a problem when the whites aren't the majority. I don't want a majority of Indians or Jeets or even Arabs and Muslims. If I want that, I'll go to UAE, bro.
Well, it's not, to me, it's not even about like,
and this comes from a Muslim dude. I even say like, bro, if I want a Sharia law, I'll go to the UAE. I'll go to the Middle East, man. Like I'm here in America
exactly.
for a reason, man.
And that is the thing is they will say, they'll say, oh, you care about white people continuing their, I mean, the 14 words. I remember being like middle school and being like, this can't be right. The 14 words are basically saying white people deserve existence. It's like, yeah. How is this a hateful thing?
And that's considered white supremacist.
You're a
white
Nazi.
Nationalist. It's, you're a Nazi, blah, blah, blah. And
really,
it's like,
it just means you're a decent person. It really just means you don't want to race genocide in because you're not evil.
Interesting. Like,
well, hold on. We got to go to break. We'll be right back. Sorry.
You're not going to talk to me and talk over me, non-New York resident. Because you don't want to hear what I have to say.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't
Go
you
ahead.
Just keep your mouth shut?
I've been on air for 31 years, but 28 years ago, I launched InfoWars, and it's changed the world thanks to all of your support of the operation. People like Hakeem Jeffries want us to shut up.
Can you, like, shut up?
That's what all their lawfare, all their lawsuits, all their attacks have been about, and they're passing anti-free speech laws in Canada, the UK, Europe. They're arresting people for even criticizing the government, and they're trying to bring that here. And that's why it's so important to try to keep InfoWars on the air. But regardless, it'll easily be taken off very, very soon. We're going to continue on in the fight. But going forward, we'll no longer be called InfoWars. That's why it's so important now, which could be your last chance, to get all of the great shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it, that have InfoWars on it. The classic designs and some of the new designs. That's why we're launching the InfoWars Veteran Edition, or Veterans of the InfoWar. All of you that supported the InfoWar, you are the InfoWar. You are the modern Paul Revere's. You're the reason we're having this massive success here in the United States and around the world. You're the reason the globalists are desperate and admit their entire system is collapsing down around them. We're winning major battles, but we've not yet won the main war. And I have been proud to fight with you over these decades. I am so blessed and satisfied by the incredible effect we've all had together. So to celebrate 28 years of the InfoWar, 1997 to 2025, which could be the end of this incarnation of it, and I hope we go on. And regardless, the InfoWar never dies. It belongs to the people. It's the term for information warfare. They use lies. We use truth. But the URL and this building and all of that goes away, and it's like rocket engines, boosters falling off as the main craft goes into escape velocity and orbit. As John Paul Jones famously said, the founder of the U.S. Navy, I have not yet begun to fight. But it is important to get original InfoWars gear while you still can. All the classic designs and the new Veterans of the InfoWar designs that are limited edition and help keep this operation on the air and fund the new Alex Jones network that's being built. We've already seen some of the studios, the great work the crew's been doing. But it's much more expansive than what you've seen, and that'll be revealed very, very soon. And that's thanks to all of your support. So when you go to thealexjonesstore.com, you will have access to the widest selection, over 500 designs of Patriot t-shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. And all of the t-shirts are $19.97 in honor of the year that I launched InfoWars.com. itself. So again, thank you all for your support. And there's more.
But wait, there's more!
With promo code Hakeem at checkout, because he wants us all to shut up, and we're not going to shut up, get an additional 10% off right now. That's promo code Hakeem. Use it now.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't
Go
you
ahead.
Just keep your mouth shut?
Hakeem Jeffries hopes you shut up. Hakeem Jeffries hopes you don't help keep us on the air, because then he can continue his tyrannical activity. That's why it's a revolutionary act when you support this operation and wear the Patriot apparel, available right now at thealexjonesstore.com, celebrating 28 years of the InfoWar. Thanks for keeping us on the air. And Hakeem, we've just begun to fight. We're not going to shut up.
Bigotry will get you nowhere. We are fighting to protect the health care of the American people in the face of an unprecedented Republican assault.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment on the War Room. Myron Gaines is my guest. By the way, folks, where else are you getting conversations like this? Obviously, you're getting it at Fresh and Fit, but InfoWars, we stand alone in our ability and willingness to have even the most difficult conversations, because they're actually not that difficult if you're just honest and genuinely love humanity and want the best for everybody. So I do hope you support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com. Right now, it's a 1997 InfoWars Mega Sale. You're getting every t-shirt for $19.97. We got the new veteran of the InfoWars design, plus 50% off CMOS gummies. And you can go there and shop easy, knowing not only you're getting the highest quality of product, but you're also supporting the singular outlet for truth, justice, and the American way. And no matter what happens with InfoWars, and it's all still up in the air at this point, thealexjonesstore.com is not owned by InfoWars, is not subject to the courts, and will power us into the future as we build whatever escape pod is necessary to get to the stars.
Make sure you guys support, man, because I was able to say nigger and Jews here, so this is great. Like, this is fantastic, the fact that I can openly say what I want to say. So you guys got to support these ninjas, man.
Hey, is anybody else's open? Well, and let's, you know, we can talk about that, because, you know, like I said, when you were talking to Alex, I kept wanting to, like, interject. Because I get the impulse, I totally understand, and it was kind of more intense when I was first working at InfoWars, where like, if you ever talked about the Jews or Israel, it's like, that became what, you know, I'd take calls, every call would be about that. That'd be the only thing people want to talk about. Calling me Mossad, I got people calling me Nazis, and it was just like, you know what, I'm just avoiding this
Nazi
topic outright.
It's annoying.
It's annoying when you're not one. But I kind of get the impulse where it's just like, oh my God, this again. And it's just like, there's nothing you can say. Nothing's ever good for anybody. So it's just like, people are obsessed with it. So I totally get that impulse.
Yeah. A lot of people do get obsessed with it.
On both sides.
Yeah. And speaking of which, I will say this, because we didn't get to say this on air with the Asians. The Asians, like, get it, man. No immigration. Like no crimes, no nothing. Like, this whole melting pot thing, it was a scam, man. Like, I'll be honest, like, you know, you guys aren't going to get a base Sudanese person like this often, right? I'm like, one of the few. But the rest of these guys are heathens. I'll be honest with y'all, man. Like, it's cooked.
Well, but is it because you're willing to say it, or is it because other people don't? Because my experience is most people of other races are just, like, perfectly open and happy with being racist compared to white people.
The smart ones are. Like, I think being racist is a trait of being higher IQ, because you're able to notice patterns, right? You start to realize, like, damn, like, women are dumb. Like, these Jews, why do they have all this power, right? Why do blacks keep committing acts of violence, right? What's going on? You guys can play basketball, but you decide to shoot for real instead of shooting the basketball. What's going on here? Like, what is going on? So, I think racism is good.
I think
you're alive, guys.
I mean, you know, there's something to that. Well, I mean, the whole idea of racism is a lie.
I had to say that one time. You Indians,
you're
you guys
call out
stink.
Indians in
shower. Shower. You guys stink. Your death threats are not going to stop me on Instagram. You guys stink. You stink.
But, I can't remember who came up with it, but somebody was just like, you know, think about racism as if there was a concept called familyism, where it's like, if I say, hey, you know, of course I'm going to take care of this girl, she's my daughter, and you go, wow, you're a familyist, you really care about your family over other families. It sounds so bizarre to us, but like 100 years ago, that's what race was like. It's just as sort of absurd, this idea of like, it's bad to like your own people over other people. It's like, well, is it bad for me to love my family? And just because I love my family and work for my family doesn't mean I want to kill my neighbor. I want to have good neighbors that are also, you know, can uplift me, and we can uplift each other.
Yeah.
But they're not my family. My family is. So, you know, I always, when you think of racism.
And then if your neighbor was committing crimes, you're like, oh, well, I don't want to have this neighbor anymore.
And you could go, and hey, everybody knows, like, hey, you know, that family is this way, right?
Yeah.
Oh, well, people from that family think this way. People from that family are pretty loud. Like, what's wrong with that? It's characteristics of different families, different races.
Oh, we forgot to mention this too, for the Waterboard Niggas Network, another torture thing would be, we'd force them to fill out job applications. They'd
maybe
have to fill it
jobs.
Out. From the beginning, was that?
Maybe even get jobs.
That's how you deal with the problem, bro. You got to make them fill out a job application on TV.
You know, it's
how we fight crime.
It's funny because, like, how many times have you heard in the last few years, we have to have difficult conversations about race? It's time to have to, which what they mean is, shut up, white people. We're going to tell you how you're evil and you're not allowed to speak back about it. But I remember, like, 2 years ago, I did a thing where I just took an ADL report that was like, how to speak to white people about race. And I just changed the words to how to speak to Jews about anti-Semitism, because you take the same words and it's like, this might be uncomfortable for you, but you have to sit and listen now. And it's like, how many times have we heard
and
that?
Like, oy vey, the anti-Semitism when you switch it around, right?
Right. It's like, okay, either this is hateful and it shouldn't be said about anybody, or it's not, and it's fine to say about Jews too. So it's like, if there's just some consistency, that's my whole thing is just like, you got to have principled beliefs. I genuinely love everybody, but I also am a white person and I feel attacked when I'm white. And I see that white people are the ones being discriminated against. White 100%. People are the ones being attacked. So it's like, okay, if it was another way around, I would be against
people say all the time, why don't you make fun of white people? I'm like, I don't need to. Everyone makes fun of them already. But no one makes fun of the blacks or the Jews or the faggots. We didn't get to talk about the faggots.
They're going nuts.
They're just like shooting everybody and going absolutely wild. Apparently the Tyler Robinson guy was a faggot. Like, bro, what's going on here?
It just seems like a total collapse of like everything, good and normal. And
looking back on it, you know what fucked everything up? What effed everything up? It was a gay marriage.
You know, it's like that meme where people go, you know, oh, what's going to happen if people get married? World War III is going to start and all this other stuff. And it's like, actually, that did happen. But it did.
And I got to look back at myself. I am an idiot because back then I was like, yeah, just let them get married. Who cares? Like, they're going to suffer as well with marriage. Nah, bro, that was the slippery slope that caused all of the problems.
There's definitely something to that. And because I was kind of the same way where I was more like, you know,
this is like 15 years ago when I was like 20 years old or something like that. Yeah.
Well, and my thing was always like, well, look, a marriage is really a religious thing. And so it's like, I don't think that churches should be marrying people, but
that was exactly my position.
Right.
And like,
civil union. Yeah. That was my position too, where it's like, well, if it's just like an agreement that the government is there.
Dude, us millennials, us millennials are stupid. Like we ruined everything. You know what I mean? Like,
I know,
man. Obama in 08 too? Or
no? Yeah, I did.
Oh, man. I'm sorry, America. I try to help you guys out with getting Kamala out of here, but we did mess up some things. Us millennials really created a lot of problems, bro. I got to be honest.
We let the blacks have
too much power by letting Obama come in. The Jews ran rampant because we never challenged them or questioned them. Like, at least these Gen Zers, like, they're like questioning, like, U.S. is liberty. Like, what's going on here? Meanwhile, we're over here like, yeah, the Jews are our greatest ally. Like, idiots.
Well, you know, it's funny because people get on me because I admit that I voted for Obama when I was 18.
I did too. We're both dumb.
Yeah, what are you going to do? But like, you forget that he was running against John frickin' McCain. I was against war. And Obama said all the right stuff. So for me, it was like he made the right pitches. He promised to get out of wars. I was like, tight. I don't want to go.
Dude, if they weren't alive in our era, they would have voted for him too. Like McCain 100%. Was not cool. Remember he used to do
the, he was the worst.
He used to do like this when he talked. You remember this?
Yeah.
He used to do this all the time.
Well, honestly, him picking, Sarah Palin to me, I was like, this is like the most important choice that you'll maybe ever make as president.
Woman. From Alaska.
Well, and it's pandering, right? He picked her because she was a woman. And to me, I was like, I can't trust you to make really important decisions if you're basing them off of just like, what's popular right now? What can I do to get an advantage at this moment? It's like, you're picking somebody who's one heartbeat away from the presidency and you pick them because they're a woman? Like, screw you.
So, he was old. Like, and the other thing too is like, you guys got to remember, like from our era, like the Iraq war, like we woke up to the Iraq war like too late.
Right.
That it was an L and everything. We didn't have alternative media like you young guys now. So I know, cause I see some Gen Zers probably like, oh, you guys are stupid, which we are a little bit. But the reality is we didn't have Twitter. We didn't have social media. None of this stuff existed when we were around like that.
Well, and I'm sure you and I were the same. We're like, I voted for Obama cause he said all these right things. But then as soon as he got into office, he didn't do them. So I was like, okay, screw this guy. He lied to me.
Yeah.
And the thing I don't understand is, okay, you voted for Obama because of ABC, then he does none of those, but then you still support him. And it's like, that I don't understand. Yeah. You have to be willing to go, this guy's not the one I thought he was. I'm not supporting
him. I didn't vote again. I voted for Obama in 08. I didn't vote again in another election until 2024.
Oh, wow.
That's how important like this one was. So I was like, because I was working for the government for a while.
Right.
So like, I was like just super focused on like doing my job and like staying away from politics. But with Trump, I was like, bro, we got to get this guy. We're cooked if Kamala gets in. So once I saw a female running for president, I was like, oh, misogyny activated. Got to get back in. And she's black and Indian. No, thank you.
And married to a Jew.
It's like all of my enemies in one woman, like one person. You're right. She's married to a Jew, Indian, black, like, and a female. No way we're getting a Jeep again.
That's what I mean. Say what you want about Trump, but can you imagine the path we could have gone down, dude?
We'd be cooked. Dude, me and you would be in jail right now, I think.
It's not unlikely.
We wouldn't even be able to do this pod now. Could you imagine? Who would be like the Gestapo just coming in and getting us right now?
We got to take advantage of this free speech while we still have it to any degree whatsoever. And obviously, like, again, that's the thing. It goes to Israel. It goes to the control, the censorship. It's ineffective. It's not going to work. It's only pissing people off. Yep. But as you're pointing out, you know, you got Larry Ellison buying TikTok, buying CBS, this, you know, Skydance thing. Clearly they're like feverishly working to try to get like all these control systems in place. And Larry Ellison goes up and talks to Tony Blair at the World Government Foundation and says, you know, we really need a single database with all the data in the world. And then AI will control how people will behave. And it's like, okay, that's the blueprint, so let's stop them from doing that. So I mean, clearly they see the way the winds are going. They see the you know, they can project into the future and go, people really don't like us. The only thing they have is like shut everybody up, shut it down,
yep,
take over all these things. And it's like, why don't you just try to be cool?
And,
why don't
you just try to stop killing people? This is just crazy. He's a Jew and like the biggest donator to like the IDF.
Biggest donator to the IDF.
Like
that's
every single time, man.
Well, I mean, clearly that's where, you know, when it comes to Larry Ellison especially, that's where his loyalty lies. The emails came out recently where he's corresponding.
Oh,
and he's saying, yeah, Rubio will be great for Israel. I'll connect him with, Tony Blair. And it's like, it's clearly what their priority is.
Yeah. I call him Marco Rubio, you know, because like, and you look at a lot of his policy, it's like, oh, does this benefit Israel? Yeah. He's a good speaker too. But yeah, dude, Adelson's give him money. He's from South Florida. South Florida's controlled by Jews. It's like, man, Mustache Man was right about some stuff, bro. That's all I got to say, man. He was on the side, man.
Well, see, that I feel like is the false dichotomy. And I was playing this yesterday again, fighting to try to get people to understand like where Alex is coming from, where we're coming from at InfoWars. It's like we have really InfoWars has gotten us this far. And whether you want to appreciate that or not, alternative media, mainstreaming ideas like false flags, telling, you know, making people not trust. I mean, look,
InfoWars has been around since the 90s, man. Like, people got to understand that, like, this has been, like, alternative media was not a thing. Like, we didn't get to grow up with it. Like, it was still, like, growing and everything. Like, all these young people that have, fact that we can sit here and say faggot on the air, you guys know how awesome that is?
Dude, it is insane to imagine. I can't even picture, but
CNN won't do this.
But, dude, think about fighting for 30 years. Being on pure Americana, pure just 1776, the Constitution, America. You fight for 30 years, just winning unbelievable victories. I mean, Alex was the reason Trump got elected, let's be honest.
Yeah, and big part of it,
I mean, they literally testified to that in the court case because they were trying to prove what big influence they had. And they were like, oh, yes, we have like multiple universities studying this. And Alex Jones is more influential than Rush Limbaugh and Steven Crowder and the next five people combined. So like, we got Trump elected. We have shattered the Overton window. It has been on the back of Alex Jones and everybody coming behind him, from the Nick Fuentes to anybody else.
He's a legend, bro. Like I've said it before, like it's irrefutable that Alex Jones was like the main guy for alternative media. You got to thank him.
So imagine plotting for 30 years, working for 30 years, only in the last 5 minutes have a bunch of young guys come up and go, shut up, old man. It's the Jews. We're all being Nazis. And it's like, oh my God, you're going to ruin it all. We've worked so hard to get to this point. Don't fall for the trap. Don't give them what they want. Cause that's exactly what they want. They want to be able to point at people and go, see, Nazis are going to kill us all. And it's just like, just don't give them that. Is it really that hard to not give them that?
Or if you're going to do a Roman suit, like just be like, look, I love everybody.
Well, but I have to, you know, to pat my own back, to pat myself on my back for a minute. When Kanye came and did the interview here and was saying, I love Hitler. And it was, you know, that was like, everybody like, oh my God. And I looked at it and went, you know, it was Kanye after Katrina who went on TV and said, George Bush doesn't like black people. And that was insane back then. Now that's such a mild thing. Everybody's in media
and
says
that. And they took that out of context. He said, I love all people. Like he said,
they should have
cut that part out. I love how they cut that out. Like they're like, yeah, I love Hitler, but they're like, I love Hitler. And they just ended it there. It's like, no, he said, no, I love all people. I'm a Christian.
Yeah. People are going, he was spouting Nazi talking points and he said, I love the Nazis. I love the Jews. I don't think that's a Nazi, but I don't think you'd find many actual Nazis with that position.
He said, I love the Jews. I love Hitler. I love everybody. I'm a Christian. And they obviously cut it up in a certain way to make it look a certain way. So,
and so as much as that was an insane interview and a very fun interview.
It was great.
He was kind of just ahead of the curve. He kind of, you know, everybody else is kind of following behind him. Not going as far as him, but like that taboo needed to be shattered. We need to get over the fear of talking about Jews. Like they're different than other people, man. And they are in some ways. I mean, in some ways that are very impressive.
They're like blacks, but like way more maniacal. Like, you know, like blacks don't have the IQ to like really plot stuff out. Jews got, they can plot stuff out, man.
Dude, there's, I mean, you know, you look at history, there is something special about Jews, and you have to admit it. Whether you like it or not,
it's
like.
You don't get kicked out 109 times and like over 1,000 times and still survive. Like, oh, but these guys are resourceful.
They got something figured out. And a lot of it is the in-group versus the out-group. And it's the, you know, idea of like, you have to stick with your kind or else they're all going to kill you. So, I mean, that's they reinforce that constantly.
If we practice just a little bit of the like the nationalism and the like the self-love
I don't begrudge them for that.
Yeah, yeah. They do false flags. They do all this crazy stuff. You guys are wondering, like, man, why did Israelis do it? For Israel. They're true nationalists and patriots. They love their country. Netanyahu is like a crazy patriot. Like, he does whatever he needs to do for Israel.
And like, I was talking to a Jewish friend a few years ago.
Even though he's evil.
And he was looking for a new job. And I was going, you know, are you going to stay here? Are you going to go somewhere else? And he was like, well, you know, I'm a Jew. So like, he's like, there's not that many of us. And so pretty much I could go anywhere in the world and get a job.
Yeah.
And that's just how it is. Yeah. And so, you know, to me, I'm sitting there thinking like, oh, good for you, man. Like, damn, that's awesome. Like, I wish I had that.
Mordecai could go anywhere.
And like, what am I supposed to say to him? You can't do that. You can't take advantage of your international networks. It's like,
Henry Ford talked about this with the international Jew. Like, people sit there and say, that's anti-Semitic trope, bro. It's so true. Like, world Jewry is real.
I mean, they're not that many of them. They all go to the same camps. They got
Candace Owens banned in Australia. Like, people sit there and say, oh, it's not true. Dude, it is so true, bro. Like, they run England, they run Australia, they run Canada. They're like, all the first world English speaking countries, like, they got their hooks in, man. Oy vey. Like, they got it, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
well, it's cultural and, you know, they all go to Hebrew school and,
yeah.
And like, a lot of Jews don't even realize. I remember talking to a girl in high school and she was like, oh, I gotta go to like Hebrew school. And I'm like, it's kind of cool you guys have like a secret language. Like, yeah. It's kind of cool that you could go anywhere in the world and converse in a common language with any Jewish person there. So again, it's like,
and they don't want anyone to know it. Like, they don't like other
people. Well, that's where it gets kind of that's where it gets like, you know, infuriating to people, is because it's like, I'm fine for you to have support from your fellow Jews around the world and can get jobs. Like, good for you. I got no grudge. But when you then turn around and try to tell me that's evil for me to do that, now we have an issue.
Yeah, and they have their own schools too. Schools, community, whatever. They don't gotta deal with the black people. Like, why do we gotta deal with the black people? Why do we gotta deal with them? But you guys have your own communities and you guys don't deal with them. And then you got the nerve to call me racist. Maybe I am. Maybe I am. But you don't gotta deal with black people, so be quiet. All right? The only way you guys deal with them is when you give them music record contracts, or when you make them play NBA or whatever, like, yeah, dance monkey, play some basketball, make me some money. Then you, oh yes. And then after that, you know, they leave, right? They don't gotta deal with them. They don't gotta live next to them or anything like that.
I disavow. No, but you know, again, it's like, the mainstream media at large can only like push division and like demonize white people and like say the most horrible thing. It's like, you're gonna get backlash, man. People are gonna go, oh, this is the game we're playing. All right, square up. Like, okay, you want to talk about this? And again, I have trouble resisting that, right? There's a video, I talk about all the time from The Cut where it's like, what are white people superior at? And it's a bunch of black people just being like, I don't know, smelling bad. And it's like, oh, you want to go? Okay. We're talking about stereotypes now, but I have to like, I'm like, no. We gotta love them. We gotta love, you know what? Instead of hating black people, I'm just gonna love white people. How about that? I'm just gonna love white people even more. And that's gonna be my
solution. You're on your own. I hate them.
Well, you can hate them if you want.
No, I'm just kidding.
You can. I mean,
they're just so easy to make fun of though. It's like, bro, like, you guys can't speak English properly. It's like ax instead of ask. You commit crimes. You guys don't want to do jobs. You bunch of porch monkeys, watermelon felons. It's like, bro, it's like the jokes are just like, they write themselves. Like, it's just so funny, right? It's like, you know, let me ask you a question. Why are you racist? Ugh. It's like, bro, oh man, you guys just.
Well, you know, it's, honestly, I wish they were doing it. I don't want to live in a country where like a huge portion of the population is just in desperate, abject poverty and committing crimes all the time. Like,
been to St. Louis, like,
genuinely,
these black neighborhoods are terrible.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be nice if like you go into a black community and be like, this is wonderful. Like,
no,
it's,
you gotta hide your stuff. You know, you gotta hide your jewelry. You don't want to get stabbed. You don't want to get shot.
That sucks, man. So, you know, it's like
gang violence.
Why would I want black people to be in that position?
And then when they go to other places, like, have you seen them like in Tokyo?
No.
Like, they act like idiots and stuff like that. It's like, you know, then you, the Asians remember why they don't have them there either.
Right. Well, and that's, you know, that's the thing about Asian countries. Like, I went to Japan for 2 weeks. It was like the best 2 weeks of my life. And like, there were things I couldn't do because I was white. you try to go into a bar and they go, Japanese only. Yeah. And my response to that is like, good for you. Keep it up. You know?
Yeah, they're openly racist too. Like, they'll call you a gaijin. They'll be like, no, you can't come in.
Yeah, and it's like, am I supposed to be offended at that? I'm like, good for you. No, I'd ruin your vibe. So, like, it's fine. I get it. I respect it. I'm happy for you to have what you have. That's why I don't, like, care about people calling white people racist. Cause it's like, when I'm in the opposite position, I don't feel like that. I'm not mad at the Japanese for not accepting me. They're Japanese. They can accept whoever
racism
they want.
Racism is good. I think it's a good thing. It keeps you safe. It keeps you sharp. Smart people are racist. It is what it is, dude. Like, the hierarchy people I know, they're all racist because they can recognize patterns.
Well, what's funny to me is I feel like everybody kind of maybe goes through this sort of thing where it's like, first you learn about like the founding fathers and it's George Washington didn't chop down the cherry tree and they're sort of like upheld as gods or whatever. But then like you go to school and you learn, actually they were all racist and you're like, oh man, that they were all bad. And then you're like, no, they weren't. They gave us the Constitution. They weren't racist. Then you go read their letters. Yeah, they were pretty racist. No, it was like not a subtle thing. Everybody that settled the West was like, we are an outpost of white people. We are driving white civilization in. It was, I mean, clearly you go back 100 years and more, people, you know, we're not shy about this. Is we're doing this for my race and my posterity and my people. They were not shy about it.
And the crazy thing is too, like, well, blacks, right? I make this comparison all the time. They were more successful during the height of Jim Crow when it was like the worst. Like they had the family unit was together, which is the importance of the family unit, right?
Yep.
The family unit was together. They made the most money despite all the problems they had, black owned business, whatever. And then as soon as that disintegrated, what ended up happening? Just crime and a whole bunch of BS. It's like you went from like Jackie Robinson to like Jaquel Robinson. Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on here, bro? Like,
for real?
Committing crimes and stuff like that. So it's like, it's just ridiculous.
It is. And you know,
black excellence is cooked.
People will think that's like covering up. They'll be like, oh, no, it's whatever. Like, people think that that's like a cope of some sort to go like, no, the Civil Rights Act destroyed the black community, but it just did. I don't know what else to tell you. It literally did. And you can find interviews of black people who grew up in the Civil Rights era and they describe, I mean, it's indistinguishable from a white family describing picket fences and families together and dinner, picnics at the park. It's like, no, it was actually nice. And then the government came along to help and it's been, 50 years of the downslope.
Lyndon B. Johnson, man.
Yeah. And whether that was on purpose or whether it was just an accident, I don't know. I think probably at least a part of it was on purpose.
Everything got messed up when Kennedy got killed, man.
Seriously. That was a turning point.
You want to talk about a turning point. Like, we lost our nuclear weapons. The Jews stole them. Lyndon B. Johnson took power. U.S.'s liberty happened. It's like, dude, we got cooked.
AIPAC and FAR and all that. Yeah.
Yep.
And that's another one. And like, that's kind
JFK
of the thing.
JFK was the last real nigga left.
Well, yeah, and RFK Jr.'s not doing too bad either. The Kennedys are just an interesting clan.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's one of those things where, like, I would always have people come up and be like, so who really killed JFK? And I'm always just like, do you really want to know? And they're like, oh, okay, Israel. I'm like, yes, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I
had a hand in it.
It's like cliche at this point, but, like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff you can look back to. There's a lot of evidence for that. There's a lot. You ever see this video?
No,
you see what this guy's doing? I don't know.
What is this?
This is Shmuley, and he's talking about like Hitler, and he's like gyrating. You ever see this video?
Yeah, I call him the Rabbi Dildo.
Dude, he is so
weird. Or the Dildo Rabbi, excuse me.
But this is another one where it's like, okay, does Rabbi Shmuley really think he's helping the Jewish people, or is he deliberately trying to piss
people
off?
Dude, even people like Ben Shapiro say this guy's hurting.
Right?
Like, he's like messing it up for them, bro. And he looks like the happy merchant too, cause he has like the weird like pox on his face and stuff. Like, he literally,
he's cartoonish.
Like, if he did this, like, you'd be like, oh, that's him right there.
Drawing him accurately would be a hate crime.
Precisely. Yeah. The ADL would lose their minds. Anti-Semitism, boy, vey.
I'm the same as Alex was saying earlier today. I would be so happy if we just didn't have to talk about this anymore, but like, clearly, we got to talk about it until we don't have to talk about it. And the reason that we're in the situation we are now is because we haven't talked about it.
Yeah,
up
for
now.
Decades. For decades, this was a banned, censored topic, man. Like, you couldn't talk about this at all.
Well, they can't stop us anymore. Folks,
they can't censor us all.
That's gonna do it for us, for this week. Myron Gaines on X at Myron Gaines X. He, of course, hosts Fresh and Fit Podcast, the world's number one men's podcast. The dumbest ladies out there. Go find him on Rumble and YouTube Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern time. Thank you so much for joining us as always, Myron.
Always a good time, man. Thank you for having me.
We didn't piss anybody off today, did we?
Maybe the Jeets and Indians and the Jews and the blacks, but it's fine.
Hakeem Jeffries, the petty tyrant, wants you to shut up.
Why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
He doesn't want you to have free speech. He doesn't want you to be able to exercise your views and stand up for yourself. That's because he, like other tyrants in the EU, Canada, the UK, the Democratic Party, can't win with their ideas that are so unpopular. They can only silence people. So in honor of him trying to tell all of us to shut up.
Can you like... shut up.
You get an additional 10% off right now at thealexshowstore.com on top of all the other big sales with promo code Hakeem. It's that simple. You know Hakeem Jeffries and the Democratic Party have been attacking us, attacking you, attacking President Trump, trying to bully us into submission, but it's not going to work. And the larger store sale that's going on right now is all of the Patriot t-shirts, the Patriot apparel, the widest selection, some of the best designs are 1997 in honor of myself and the crew launching Infowars.com in 1997, 28 years of the Infowar. So that is the Veterans of the Infowar sale. And on top of it, 10% off at checkout with the promo code Hakeem. And there's a bunch of limited edition Infowars, Veterans of the Infowars shirts, all the original designs and more. Because if Infowars is shut down and the bad guys get the name, they've said they're going to try to stop us from using the term Infowar in the future. But it's a generic term. It belongs to the world. They're going to try to misrepresent it with The Onion and Bloomberg, who are running all of this. It's going to blow up in their face big time. But regardless, for original Infowars designs and these limited editions that help fund this operation and the future operation, the Alex Jones Network backup, it is critical to get these right now because it could be your last chance. It's all coming to a head right now. So thank you all for your support. You are veterans of the Infowar, and I salute you all.